Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, there we go. Welcome. Never mind the squeak in the door there. Courtesy of Fogsbane. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here along with
Dag Bakley from Weird This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and I'm here along with
All Aboard for Blay Blay. Okay, it is I, Gar the Ghoul.
Is he?
Uh-oh.
It is him. It is us.
He's got the train whistle. I should have thought to pull mine out. I've got mine in my prop box. I should have known to pull mine out, too.
I think I have one. It's like a square whistle thing, and I don't know where I have mine.
Yeah, a wooden rectangular thing. Yeah.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
That's a Blazing Saddles quote if I ever heard one. We got three, no less than three, thrilling train tales for you tonight. Hmm.
We went through the ringer to get these together, too.
We did. Yeah. We had another program planned, and Gar called me, this one really it's kind of tough for you, and you can't hear some of the words that are talking in there to open it up and things like that. So it kind of went in and out, that kind of a thing.
Kind of like my microphone last weekend.
Yeah.
Yep. You're sounding pretty strong tonight, though.
Don't scare people. We want them to stay. All right. We got Weird Circle, Haunting Hour, and High Adventure. No, not a 70s story of psychedelia. Something different.
Yeah. This is the first. That's the first time for Eerie House was High Adventure out of South Africa.
Yes. We did end up with a South African episode after all.
American version on Mutual of High Adventure, but there really are only a handful of those. There's a lot more of these available.
Right.
Interesting stories. I have two of them I really like that I have penciled in for later podcasts. So, but
I ran across opinions on this where people were saying that the writing was just amazing and superb. And of course, those are opinions, but. I was like, okay, sure.
I found some very good stories. One of my volunteers that reads for the blind, I send him, he's from South Africa. What's interesting is actually I sent him his recording last time he visited South Africa, and he would record it from South Africa and send it to me, and it would make it regular broadcast time. I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway, every day when I send him his reading assignment, I send him a different program from South Africa. And I listen to them as well, so I'm starting to get versed in some of the South Africa old radio programs. And that's kind of how I fell into this one here. So.
And Dave, thanks you for bringing them to us here on Eerie House, because we've got an inexhaustible supply. We've been at this over 5 years and have never, never repeated a show. How about that? Other than World War II.
There's so much content to cover. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, essentially we're bringing 30, 40 years worth of old-time radio to listeners, and it's just amazing.
Yep. And with our collective age of ages, let's hope we live to get through it all.
I don't know if you add up our ages. If you add up all of our ages, we're all dead by now. So,
exactly.
You don't want to be doing that. You don't want to be doing
not
that.
Now?
Yeah. Yeah, right now.
Some days it feels like I'm mighty close. Mighty, mighty close.
I understand.
I'm coming to visit
you,
Elizabeth. Yeah, that one.
It's always good times. Always good times. Here at Eerie House. Oh, boy. Yeah. Where shall we start with this thrilling triad of tales?
We could run with High Adventure. That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. Again, coming to us out of South Africa, and I found a very interesting story. And that's what, you know, this is actually the one of the reason I built the program around. I'd heard the Mystery Theater for tomorrow night again recently and thought, oh, that's a fun one. And then this came along, and I just needed to find another couple programs to wrap around it for the weekend. And like I said, I've been really starting to get into some of the a lot of the stuff, because you got to remember, South Africa didn't have television until the early 1970s. They just didn't have the technology, didn't spend the money on the technology, and so it was radio. And Springbok Radio was a commercial radio station when there was kind of a BBC arm down there, the SABC or something like that. And so these things lived well into the 70s. They have a Springbok online now, and you can actually listen to that station as it exists. I'm not sure if it broadcasts or if it's like a Wixie 1260 deal where it's only online.
Don't know. But you can always count on some of those South African shows being brought here.
Absolutely.
Well, wild thing to think about are your fathers and my grandfather and my father listened to radio because TV wasn't around when they were around.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. I come from rather humble beginnings, and although the TV technically existed commercially since 1939, I mean, no family I know ever got a TV until like the 50s maybe when
– right.
When there was a pretty big, you know, a growing, booming economy, a lot of blue-collar workers had a little bit more money to spend.
Well, we all know that Dale's family only got by on shadow puppets.
Yes.
But
shadow puppets and growing green beans there.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Whatever works.
But not sock puppet.
We were so poor we couldn't afford a shadow puppet.
Yeah, exactly. We couldn't afford a shadow.
Oh, wait a second. There's got to be music for this.
Arma. Yeah.
I know somewhere there's music for this.
Arma. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, here we go with the story of my life. Hold on, Wire. I was born at a very young age. I was so poor I couldn't afford parents. A young Italian boy adopted by a Polish family. I got Foxbane in tears. Good old Bob looks kind of sad there. GGSI paper, I'm sure. Feeling sorry for me, because that's what I live for.
They reach for the Kleenex box. I saw them. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That'll be enough nonsense. Enough indulgence and self pity.
Yes. So particular High Adventure was mislabeled, and it's mislabeled across many different websites across the universe as something called Fireflies and Gunfire. The correct title is Tea Kettle Number 3640.
I'll agree.
I would prefer Fireflies and Gunpowder.
If only I had my machine gun sound effect ready, because... yeah, there you go, yeah.
I don't know, it works Fireflies for me. I just... Fire. I'm weird that way.
Yeah. Well, yes. And we have an air date.
Have we?
Sure,
if you please.
June 28th, 1969.
There we go.
According to three people with guns.
And fireflies. And gunpowder.
And gunpowder.
It'll start. Trust me.
Thank you. adventure.
Tonight's story by Norman Partington is entitled Tea Kettle Number 4630.
To the scrap iron department. Get yourself a real locomotive, eh?
Oh, a real engine, you say? Is that what you call that mobile fuse box of yours with its metal coat hanging on top? Hey, what kind of pleasure do you get driving that thing? Flicking over switches and all that. The thing doesn't even sound like an engine.
It does the job darned efficiently, though, Coopers. It'll not be long now before the whole country's electrified. Then you can retire that tea kettle of yours and stop polluting the air.
Ah, Frank, they'll never retire old 4630. There isn't a gradient in South Africa that this brute couldn't pull a freight train up. Listen, man, once I've got steam up, I could take it from here to Cairo.
With or without a railway line, eh, Coolidge?
Ah, man, Frank Parsons, take your little spinning dynamo away and let the real engine get on with its work, man.
See you later, Coolidge.
I guess he's right, Mr. Faree. These old steam engines are just about finished. And they never let us take any trains on any decent journeys. Just something about the marshalling yard. That's all we ever do.
Harry, hey, stop your moaning. You'll get your chance someday when they give you your engine. And then you can make your own choice. As for me, oh, man, I'll stick with the old tea kettle number 4630 until I retire. And listen, young man. Take the oil can and give those driving shafts a bit of juice. Hey, and put your coat on unless you want to get soaked in the rain.
Rain, I'm sick of it. It's been going on like this for 7 days. Here, did you hear the radio news about the Tugela River? It's nearing its record height. What about them bridges that cross it?
Oh, nothing for you to worry about, Harry. The line superintendent keeps a pretty close check on them. You blow the whistle quickly enough if he's worried. Now push up with that oil can.
How'd you like to take a ride with us in the cab, eh, Superintendent? At least more comfortable in these electric locos than old Corpus Faree in his old tea kettle.
Yeah, I can say that again, Frank. Even so, I spent many years on the footplate of engines like old 4630. But I know you can get attached to steam engines like you can never feel about electric ones.
Yeah, but they're more efficient.
I agree. Cleaner and more efficient in every way. There's a kind of soul in a steam engine that... Easy with that throttle, Frank.
Yeah?
So much darn rain about, you'd hardly see the lights.
Yeah, we're well under the permitted speed for this stretch, Superintendent.
Slower still, Frank. We're only a couple of miles off that big bridge across the Tugela.
Now, what was the last report, Super?
No danger to the bridge, but the water level has gone past its highest recorded mark.
Uh-huh.
And that means thousands of tons more water pressing against the supports. That breakdown, Superintendent, I thought I'd better check it myself. Might have to stop traffic over it if this continues.
Oh, come off it, Super. I've taken trains over that bridge when the whole river's been so in flood that it looked as if we were crossing the Pacific.
Slower still, Frank. You've got a wake behind you, plus 1,000 passengers. I remember 20 years ago taking a freight train across... Frank!
Yeah?
Slam on your brakes! Into reverse!
Right.
The bridge!
Holding. It's slipping forward.
Well, use the sandbox.
It's stopping. Holding. Heavens, hey. Super. We're at an angle.
Get out of the cab and uncouple that engine from the coaches. This thing's likely to slide onto the bridge. Can't you see where the bridge is buckled slightly? The whole thing will go if it gets the added weight of the engine. And it'll take the whole train with it. Open the door.
Right. The couplings have jammed with the angle of the engine and the sudden stop. Merciful heavens! The bridge is breaking up at the other side.
Stay with the couplings. Use a sledgehammer and see if you can part them. There's a line telephone by the signal. I'm going to get help.
But how can you? The power line's down.
There are other engines besides the electric ones, Frank. Now, you stay there. Hello? Hello? Why the blazes? Hello? What took you so long to answer? Breakdown, Super. The Tugela Bridge. Yes, the bridge's the main one. It's going. Halt all traffic both sides and get a breakdown train up here. An emergency. As fast as you can. Well, use 4630. Get her covered up and tell Comus Ferry to break every blasted record in getting here. We've got a train on the bridge approaches. The engine's on an incline and slipping. Well, hurry then, man. Get moving.
Breakdown train coupled, Harry?
Coupled, Mr. Ferry.
Climb aboard, Harry, and get shoveling coal. I want top pressure. Here we go. Three notches. Show him what a real engine can do.
Slipping. The bridge is starting to buckle. The line's done about 9 inches. Are all the passengers out?
Most of them, Frank. But the lot refuse to get out because of the weather. The guard's going through the train hammering those who won't get out. Like us, they see no reason why they should get out when the train looks so safe.
But if the bridge goes anymore and the line sinks down, even just a few more inches, the loco's going to slide forward and drag the whole train with it. Where the blazes is the breakdown train? We've just got to get those couplings loose.
Corvus Ferry and our 4630's on their way.
What?
This is one time, Frank, you can be grateful we still have a few steam engines available. The whole power line's down and all the electric locos are stopped.
If Corvus gets here in time and saves this lot, I'll get down on my knees and pray out loud all night.
Head along the gate is nearly in the red, Mr. Free. It won't take any more pressure.
Keep shoveling, Harry.
Maybe the old boilers aren't what they used to be, but they'll take that pressure.
Please, Mr. Ferry, the speed limit's 50 and we're doing 70.
Do you know, Harry, when the old tea kettle was new, it was actually tested at 85 in England before it was sent down here. Not that I've ever done that speed myself in it. It's against regulations, you know.
But I think this is one time I shall find out if those manufacturers were telling the truth.
That's up to two more knockers, please.
Just bent your back to that shovel.
The breakdown gang of the trucks behind them going to ride.
The train I have, Mr. Ferry. Here, did you see the people in that station we just passed through? They could hardly believe their eyes at the speed we were going.
Oh, maybe they'll start thinking it's quicker to go to Johannesburg by train than by jet aircraft.
The roof is even higher, and it's taken half the bridge with it on the other side. Did you get all the passengers out, Frank?
Honestly, I don't know, Super. As fast as the guard chases them out one side, they crawl underneath for shelter or else climb back into the coaches from the other side. It seems daft to them to stay out in the rain and get soaked when there's apparently a good, healthy train standing empty next to them.
Well, it's not going to be there much longer if Corvus Ferry doesn't get here quickly with their breakdown gang.
Yeah.
Frank! Oh, come away! There's another section of that bridge going.
Why,
just look at it. Must be 100 feet in length. And the river's just ripped it away. I'm going to have another look at the track under the locomotive. I put a marker in here. The track's tilted down 2 more inches these past 15 minutes. Damn those couplings!
Well, suppose Corvus does get here on time. Do you think he'll be able to pull this lot far enough back to safety, Super?
I doubt it. If the locomotive tilted down on such an incline, he'll never be able to pull it against its dead weight.
Yeah.
And candidly, we don't get those couplings smashed within this next half hour, the rest of the bridge will go. And so will the whole darn train.
Harry, keep a lookout for the line ahead. This is a real bad area we're going to pass through now.
Why is that, Mr. Ferry?
Because the whole land about here dips right down until it's almost a level of the river. Each time we have a bad rain, the river overflows and floods this part here. I remember once, many years ago, taking a train through when the track was under 12 inches of water. I can tell you, young man, my heart stopped beating for 15 minutes till I got through.
What? 12 inches? It's a miracle it didn't get to the piston chambers and stop the engine.
No, I had a fair margin of safety, and I felt it was worth the risk.
Oh, stand on the track, Harry, quickly! It's underwater, the whole track. Hey, it's just like an inland sea. But we'll have to back up, Mr. Brew. We can't take it through that lot.
Oh, shut up, Harry. Let me think. Can you see the signal gantry?
Yeah.
Look where the water's there, up to the third cross member, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
About 2 feet 6 inches from the ground. Mm-hmm. 2 feet six. Our piston chamber's about 3 feet 6 inches to spare. I think we can do it, Harry. But we'll have to take it easy.
Mr. Free, you don't know the condition of the track underneath. How about if it's been washed away or the bed loosened? So if you put the weight of the engine on it, the whole train could slide sideways into the river. As it is, we can't even tell where the track's supposed to be and the river start. It's just a mass of water for nearly a mile.
Let me tell you something, Harry. When a call goes out for a breakdown train, it's an emergency.
When they teamed up with you at the depot, they all said you were a bit crazy. I'm convinced of it. But to take a train through 2.5 feet of flooded water, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard of. Okay, Mr. Bree, I'll still shovel coal. I just hope the insurance pays our families well.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Talk about high adventure. On a train yet?
On a train, yes.
On a
high
train.
Adventure with high water and a collapsing bridge. And no electric, all kinds of fun, interesting things happening all at one time.
See, this would have been a great time for Dale to have the underwater sea microphone.
Wait a second. Hold on here. My handy-dandy Coca-Cola.
Oh, I'm sure you could rip a few wires out.
Better?
Much better.
There you go.
And I have a spit cup next to me, too.
We didn't need to know, but...
No.
Yeah, please, yes. But
got me some chaw.
I don't have my triangle with me. Because you go boink, ding, you know, the whole.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. In the
we'll
good
pretend.
Old spittoon, yeah.
Yes.
Train on a collapsing bridge. Wow, sounds like an Irwin Allen film that didn't make it.
Yeah, it does.
You know? Come on, Irwin, it'll be great. A train. It's on a track. It's going to fall. Come on. It'll
you know,
be great.
He didn't have the nerve to tackle the Golden Gate Bridge, and Harryhausen did.
Yeah,
although,
I know.
Although
yeah, exactly.
He wasn't supposed to.
Oh, he wasn't
Seriously.
Supposed to?
No, I believe Harryhausen, and of course we're talking about It Came From Beneath the Sea. With
right.
With
the thing that came up on the bridge and... Like
yeah,
part of
which
yeah.
wasn't really an octopus because it had less than 8 tentacles. But I digress.
maybe it was just a handicapped octopus, okay?
Yeah. They were
you
afraid
know.
that public trust in the integrity of the bridge would be eroded, seriously, which is why they didn't want it being in a disaster film.
So could we say it's a handicapable octopus?
Well, you
could say
know.
That.
Where does a giant six-tentacled octopus, go? And the answer
wherever
is everywhere
it wants.
At once. Wherever it wants,
yes.
Right.
Whatever it's in the mood
that
for.
Old King Kong do. Yeah.
That's right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. The GG side papers there, it's talked, it was sounding like the Ashtabula River train disaster bridge. I know somebody that's making a PBS documentary on that Ashtabula River bridge. Matter of fact, Rick, my cameraman, he's been working on it with them. I just haven't had the opportunity to go out and work with him. He's, I think he's got most of the filming done. He's got all the funding for it because for PBS, you have to have all the funding for it before you do it. And essentially, PBS owns it for like 2 or 3 years, and then the rights go back to you and you end up on History Channel, things like that. But, yeah,
yeah.
They're doing a documentary, and they even did some mock-ups of the people and the dress of the day and the train crash and all kinds of things. So,
yep.
I mean, not just trains, but regular automobile bridges. We've been having an infrastructure failure for quite a long time, as these bridges need to constantly be maintained, and a lot of them are not.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
I mean, the bridge is defying nature in its existence. It really is.
I just want to see the old wooden covered bridges preserved. Anyway.
Or rebuilt.
We'll be down to that anyway.
Whole lot of radio.
Whole lot of radio. Want to take some moment there to thank the live chatters with us. GGSI
yes.
Paper, good old Bob, Fogsbane, and Angel has joined us.
Angel Asylum's here. Hello, Angel.
Yep. From Angel from Angel's Asylum, absolutely. Also, a couple people that you guys can't see from work. Create yourself a little profile and come and chat with us. We'd love to talk to you. Anywho. We should probably wrap up our South African sweet deal here with not fireflies and gunpowder, but
Tea Kettle number 3640.
Oh, yeah, it was close. This is part two.
Yeah.
Closer than I was.
Superintendent. The couplings are so twisted at that angle, we'll have to cut through them with an oxyacetylene torch.
We're not going to have time, Frank, if that bridge section slips any lower. Now look, you people. Get out of here. Can't you see you're in danger? Keep clear of the train before the whole lot slides into the river.
Oh, where the blazes are the police to keep control.
Can't get through to us, I suppose. This is low-level ground and the whole area around here is flooded.
And what about Kubus and his breakdown train?
I'm expecting no miracles. The river's probably burst its bank by now and flooded the track.
Yeah.
The only thing we can do is stand back and try to see no lives are lost when that bridge goes completely.
Oh, I don't know. Old Kubus is such a stubborn chap, he's quite likely to swim through and pull the train along with him.
Even the most stubborn chap in the world can't take a steam train through water 2 feet deep. And that's what I imagine it'll be by now.
Even slower, Mr. Puri. It's kicking up such a bow wave, it'll flood over the piston soon.
The line is level at this part here. But there's just a slight gradient down about half a mile ahead.
How are you going to get through it? It'll be over the piston.
Can you handle the regular, Daddy? Just keep it at the walking pace.
Yeah, but what are you doing, Mr. Puri?
Walking on the line ahead. Then as soon as the line dips, I'm going to take it at speed.
The water'll be up to your thighs. If you're not careful, you get swept away, Mr. Puri.
Take over now, Daddy. I'm getting down into the track.
Jam your brakes for the moment I hold my hand up.
Right.
Gee, but the water's cold. Right, Harry. Wait until I'm in front of the engine, then up the regulator 1 knot. Right? Hey, stop it now. The gradient's here.
Phew. At least the rain stopped. All right, Daddy, move over. Get that pressure as high as you can. The gradient's only 200 yards in length. I'm going to back up, then accelerate like the devil. we'll just bust our way through the water like a cruiser going into battle. Not that I've ever seen a cruiser going to battle. They don't have many of them in the Free State, you know. Right, you reverse. Good. Pressure right.
Pressure? The yard foreman could see that pressure gauge this minute. We'd both be out of it looking for a job.
Oh, in the red, is it?
Right in the red.
Then here goes. Hold on to your hat, Harry.
It's moving. It's taking me. Here. Look at that wave. It's pouring right over the boilers.
Don't get to get into the furnace. It's taking all right. Good old sea kettle. Go.
I see it shallowing. We're going to make it, Mr. Marie. The old sea kettle's doing it. Come on, 4630. Come on. A few yards more. Oh, dear old tea kettle, I love you.
Win out, hey, my boy, win out. I told you the old girl had it in her. I have to regulate that as fast as devil can take us to the bridge.
Frank, check with the guard that he's put out the boxing.
Not check. He's done it. He's a good man, knows his job. Though what train's going to explode them, I wouldn't know. Nothing can get through in this weather. How's the bridge holding, Super?
Just listen to it, creaking away. If I just put my weight on it, I'm sure the rest of it will go.
I just looked at that marker. The locomotive's down another 2 inches. And it slipped forward nearly 3 feet. It's not going to take it. Yeah. Do you hear that, Super?
A fog signal detonated. Surely old Corbett can't have...
Find that the guard knows his job. In the end of the breakdown, he rushes back along the line and fixes these fine explosives on the track. That was the warning one. In a minute or two, we'll hear 2 consecutive bangs, and then we'll slam on the brakes. Any sign of the train yet?
No, not yet, Mr. Paris. Though with a night as black as this one, we could smack into it if it were only a dozen yards ahead.
Keep your eyes skinned, my boy. Only... There they are! Down, regulator! Up with the anchors, Harry boy!
Robert! That you, old driver?
Am I glad to see you? Everything okay?
It's now, Super. What can I do for you?
I'll shake out the breakdown, too. I want oxyacetylene torches on the couplings. The loco is ready for going into the river and pulling the train with it. Corbis, when the men are out, back up your train 1/2 mile, uncouple, then bring the tea kettle down here and couple onto the back of the train, okay?
Corbis, take it easy with that coupling. No jarring or you'll push the entire train into the river.
Jarring me? Man, I can couple onto that train as softly as a mother kissing a baby. Just watch it. Just watch it and see how a real railwayman does the job.
Slowly, Corbis. 12 more inches. Slowly. 6 inches. 3 inches. Easy now. Perfect. Now lock your brakes and be ready to reverse if we get the signal.
Corbis. I've got a very light from out of one of the breakdown trucks. If I fire it, uncouple and back away, Don, quick, because that'll mean the train sliding into the river. I think we're going to be too late. Foreman tells me it'll take him nearly an hour to cut through those links.
Oh, the bridge isn't going to last that long. You can almost feel the line slipping down. Down the river.
I'm just wondering.
What, Super?
If I dare take the risk.
Risk? What have we got to lose?
Except the old train. What have you in mind, Super? Those couplings.
Yeah?
We can't wait an hour to cut through them. We've got to get them unfastened within minutes.
Nothing can do it quicker than a torch, Super.
Except
what? Blast them. With dynamite.
Dynamite?
You'll only have to cough near that bridge and the whole lot will go into the river.
We always have a supply of dynamite in the breakdown trucks for emergency. Tell the foreman, Frank, to bring me 3 sticks immediately.
I've heard of some mad thing.
Get to move on, Frank. 3 sticks and a fuse.
Right.
Cover! Carefully! Down here!
Okay, what's it now, Papa? What's it now? I hope you're not going to ask me to drag the train and the loco back off the bridge. Because even the old tea kettle can't do that with a loco at that angle.
Not that, Corbus. I'm going to blast the couplings, free the train from the loco, and then you've got to drag the train back to safety before it follows the loco into the river. Can you do it, Corbus?
Man, even miracles, so long as they're only little miracles, are possible with old 4630.
Well, this is going to be a big miracle, Corbus. I'm setting dynamite on the couplings. I warn you with a shout. You'll have just 3 minutes before they detonate. Have steam up to maximum pressure. Put the loco into reverse. Take up a slight pressure, not too much. And the very second the dynamite blows, get that regulator up and back away with the whole train as quickly as possible.
Have you got that, Corbus?
Got it, Hoover.
And look here, Corbus 3. No heroics. The chances are that when the dynamite blows, so will the bridge. And if the couplings haven't been cut, then the train and the old tea kettle is likely to be dragged forward straight into the river. So you and your fireman be ready to jump if that happens. Okay, Corbus.
And have no fears about that. If old tea kettle starts to go for a swim, then we're going to part company pretty darn quick.
Right there, Sue. Then we should have a clean break.
Leave the explosives to me, Frank, and go and make sure everybody's out of the area.
Right, I'll do that.
Tell that guard to go through the train again. And if he finds anybody inside, to boot him out.
Right.
There's less than a 50-50 chance of pulling this off. Now, hurry it up, Frank.
Harry, for this little lark, I think you'd better clear out the camp. There'll be one less for me to worry about.
Oh, no, I'm staying, Mr. Curry. You can't look after the engine and stoke the furnace at the same time.
Don't be a crackpot. Now, clear of this wood, please.
Now, don't do that, Mr. Free. I want to say, my job just as much as it is yours.
Corbus Free! Corbus!
Ready, Super!
Lighting the fuse now, Corbus! 3 minutes from my signal. Ready?
Ready!
1, 2, 3. Fuse lit, Corbus!
Get away from there, Super! Come back here! When the dynamite goes up, the whole lot's gonna go.
I'm safe here, Frank. I'm sheltering behind this carriage. Get down, Frank. 2 minutes to go.
Brake up. Brakes hard on. Seem to reverse. One notch on the regulator. Harry, more sand on the tracks beneath the driving wheels. Ready. 15 seconds to go. 4, 3, 2, 1. Come on, get blowing. There it is. Brace off, up regulator. More sand, Harry.
He's not moving, Mr. Furry.
Down well is, but the wrong way. She's being dragged through the train. Forward gear for a few feet. Try and jerk stop to see if we can snap the couplings.
The old train sliding forward. There's the loco. It's crashing into the river.
We've done it. We've done it. The couplings gone. It's reversed again. Regulate up 2 notches. More sand, Harry. Coming back, dear old tea kettle. Keep pulling.
Corbus, old chap, you pulled off the miracle. We've lost the bridge in the electric locomotive, but we've saved the train.
And not only the train, Corbus, but at least 200 of those darn passengers have got back into the coaches. What do you think we ought to do about them, Super? Get the police to charge them for disobeying orders in an emergency? The whole lot of them could have lost their lives if the train had gone into the river.
Oh, man, leave them alone. Just let old Tea Kettle 46, that he take the train back in real style. It's a free ride for them today, Super.
It certainly will be. And it looks as if old Teacat was going to be on regular service until we get all these power lines fixed up again.
Oh, Superintendent, why don't you scrap the electrical lines and get real locomotives to do the job again? I can easily teach Frank to drive a steam engine again.
High Adventure is produced by Ann Fried and directed by Henry Diffenthal.
Oh, wow, man, like High Adventure is like so cool.
Oh, here we go.
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's moral of the story.
Even a bridge to nowhere is going somewhere. There you go.
What a thought.
Wow. Could be a political campaign.
Sorry. I couldn't resist.
Worked for me.
You know what? I'd heard that story a couple times before now, and I still wasn't sure the train was going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
You're really, really hoping it would change?
No, I just didn't know. I didn't know. There was so much tension there.
Yeah. So, okay, if I understood that correctly, they lost the electric engine train to the river, but they got the rest of the train off the tracks.
Yes.
And this is weird, and I don't know if we had these here in America. Did we have trains that ran through power lines overhead? Not the trolleys in San Francisco, but like an entire train system.
I would imagine at some point until somebody found out the hard way it was a stupid idea.
Well, I know we had steam.
I know trolley cars did that, and I know in Akron trolley cars did that, so I'm assuming in Cleveland they did that as well. But those were trolley cars and not the full train.
Not regular choo-choos. Yeah, not a choo-choo.
Yeah, right. Going 60, 80 miles an hour or whatever they went back then.
So
a
we pretty much went from – Yeah, we pretty much went, I think, over here across the pond from, as far as train goes, from steam pretty much to diesel.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
And diesel gets you there faster.
I'm not sure what they're doing over in Japan. They've got sonic trains over there. I mean, they're like,
they go like 300 miles an hour.
Electric rail.
Yeah.
The rails are electric, not something above.
I know they're working on one in California, and I think these rails type things are supposed to be somewhat magnetic, which is what pushes the train
along. Yes, maglev, magnet levitating trains or something like that.
Ooh. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Can't wait. Huh. Well, as soon as we get those, we get our flying cars, right?
I just want the flying jetpack that
that too.
Professor Robinson used to fly it in Lost in Space, you know.
How did he not burn the back of his boots? That's what I want to know. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
He took them to Ed Stinn's. Or no, Earl Scheib, I mean. Earl Scheib. Sorry, wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He got it repainted for only $39.95.
That's
exactly.
Right. That's right.
Double coat of paint.
But towards the end of our episode there, we got a bunch of comments all about that dynamite. In case of emergency, we always keep dynamite. And reminds me of my childhood. Yeah.
Must have been readily available.
Yes. Yeah, that too.
You know, I was out with the wife. We had breakfast, and a lady was complaining about the lady there at the table next to was complaining about this. All summer long, they've had this guy that, like, 3 in the morning, drives around and throws M80s out of his car, and the police haven't been able to catch him all summer long. I said, well, he should be pretty easy to spot. He's a guy with 3 fingers.
Yeah.
And that's a grand total of 3 fingers.
A grand total, yes.
Got to have 2 to flick the bick. Other than that, you know.
That's right. That's right. Yeah,
I'm being edumacated by good old Bob. Good old Bob is edumacating me. Diesel locomotives are actually electric driven. The generator is diesel powered, but the wheels are driven by electric motors.
Ooh.
There you go.
And
This show is so educational, I can hardly stand it.
I know.
And now you know.
The rest of the story, blah, blah. Where's my dynamite?
That too.
You know, Gar, I was thinking about your Andy Williams cookie bear, you know.
Oh, I love Andy Williams cookie bear.
Well, you know, because I get all these things that we accept cookies. We accept cookies on my computer. I want to know how many times I have to click I accept cookies before they actually send me the cookies.
Yeah, please.
Andy, I don't want people. Don't send me any bakery, please. Not that I don't trust you, mind you, but some stranger might go crazy. I don't know. Send me something with real sugar and watch me have a glucose fit or something. I don't know.
Well, it's not only that, but by the time we sent it, as the post office said, they're going to slow down the mail even more. By the time you got it, it would be piece of the. A big rock candy mountain, you know. It just
there you go.
A little tough by then. So
we know they're kidding. They can't slow it down anymore. Come on.
Don't challenge them. Don't.
Come on. Really?
don't challenge them, please. Don't, no.
I you know, that's one thing, and this is going way back for those that can go that far back. The Andy Williams, most of that you have to keep in your memory and hope you can pull on it, because there are not a whole lot of Cookie Bear Andy Williams videos out there.
Yeah.
Well, even if you go to the YouTubes and all that. You might have to end up buying the Andy Williams collection or something in order
to get
it.
Like yeah. Yep. Yeah.
2 more Titanic tales of trains to go.
Yes, back to the train.
Yeah.
Back to the train.
Oh,
let's say we hit the haunting hour.
The haunting hour.
The haunting hour, which is the haunting half hour, which is actually this week, the haunting
22
minutes and... Minutes and 58 seconds, yes. That's 22 minutes and 58 seconds. It's funny because this particular episode that Gar found for us, it's not in a lot of other regular rotations of radio programs out there of the Haunting Hour. And the reason is, and I heard it, but it's some radio station aired it and somebody recorded it off the radio. And so all the commercials were cut out. And then all the commercials were cut out of the airing as well, just to, you know, so they could get their own commercial, but they didn't share the modern day commercials. So that's why it went from 60 minutes to 30 minutes to 22 minutes and 58 seconds.
And I've got a really old air date on this, going back to 46. Is that right?
I believe. I think it's. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we could have gone digging for some 1946 commercials and dropped them in there, but we didn't.
We could have. We did.
Go ahead, Gar. We'll wait.
Yeah. No. Hang on. I'll be back in a few minutes.
There you go.
Promo seltzer.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. And this was wild because we started this off as the creaking door, but the creaking door creaked too much. And I was like, Dave, it creaks too much. So we ended up with the haunting hour.
Yeah, it was like underwater, like, you know, Dale's microphone.
So, like that
I'm
bridge.
Healed. I'm healed.
I feel better.
Yes.
Hey.
Destination CW? Unknowns, it is called.
CW joined us in the chat as well.
Yes.
Welcome,
yes.
CW.
And we have an air date of February 2nd, 1946.
Here's part one.
How often have you had a sudden impulse to speak to a stranger, to quit your job, or to board a train, destination unknown? That's what Kirk Holland did. And because it could easily happen to you, let me tell you his story. Kirk was a young, romantic sort of a chap, and he lived in a little town called Amesville. He had a bookshop there, on the square. And like other people of the town, oftentimes, Kirk stood in the small station and watched the 8:45 pull up to the shed. His life was a quiet life until that night. It was raining, and Kirk stood under the train shed. The steam engine puffed by, then the mail car, a coach, and another. The train stopped. Directly before him, framed in the misty window, was the face of a girl. And it was a tortured face full of pain and sadness. Suddenly, Kirk felt an unconquerable impulse to help this stranger. He stood staring at the girl's dark eyes, and then, suddenly, the coach gave a little lurch forward, and Kirk ran to the steps of the car and swung onto the train. He knew that more than anything in the world, he wanted to speak to that girl. He had to know who she was. So he took a deep breath, pushed open the door, walked down the aisle, and sat down on the seat opposite her. Finally, he leaned forward a little and said, "What's the matter? Why do you cry like that?"
"What?"
"I'm sorry, my name is Kirk Holland. I don't mean to bother you, but I couldn't help wondering if there's something I can do."
"No. No, I'm all right."
"Have you seen a woman cry like that before?"
"Maybe it's because women usually cry because they're sorry for themselves. That's not my reason."
"What is the reason, then?"
"I'm crying for someone else."
"Oh. Because you're leaving him? You're going away?"
"No, and yes."
"Where are you going?"
"To a farm I used to visit when I was that hurry. Very out of the way, up in Canada. I'm going back again."
"On vacation, then?"
"No. No, I'm going there to stay. Forever. But I'm glad you spoke to me. Made everything easier."
"You smile a little, then."
"Oh, I had a thought."
"What?"
"Oh, it's nothing."
"Tell me what."
"Well, I was thinking. Suppose somehow in the next few minutes there'd be an accident. The train off the track. A mass of steaming, mangled coaches. And suppose I were to be killed."
"Well, why do you think of that?"
"Well, it might happen. Might easily. If it did, I'd want you to do something for me."
"What?"
"I'd send you on an errand. Tonight. I'd send you backstage at the Opera House in New York."
"And what would I do there?"
"I'd want you to go to a man who'd be standing in the wings, smoking a long cigarette. A little gray-haired man named Lawrence Lane. My singing teacher."
"And what would I say?"
"You'd say, I was with Iris Martin when she died. She said to tell you she was sorry for what happened. But the thing she did was all she could do to keep you from bringing unhappiness."
"Go on."
I'd want you to take Lawrence Lane by the arm and lead him to some place where it was quiet. And stay with him for a little while. Because he'd need somebody."
"And after that?"
"That's all. There's no after that. I can't help it. I'm sorry. Thank you for listening. Oh, tray is falling down. Where are we?
Clarkston.
Clarkston?
Well, what's the matter?
Nothing. Will you save my seat for me?
Of course.
My eyes are so red and ugly. You've been very kind. Goodbye, Mr. Holland.
You're listening to The Haunting Hour on the Golden Age of Radio Theater. Now, back to The Haunting Hour. She took up her polo coat and purse and walked away. Kirk watched her slim body move down the aisle. A feeling of loss fell over him. Why had she said goodbye like that? He waited, his heart thumping fast inside him, breathing short and quick. Something was the matter. The watch on his wrist ticked away 1 minute, two. He didn't come back. Then suddenly the train was starting. Kirk sat up. Then from out the corner of his eye, on the platform beyond the window, he caught a fleeting glimpse of a polo coat disappearing in the dingy station. He was running away. She'd gone out of his life, desperately and forever. He ran down the aisle, out on the car's platform, and jumped off the train. The station platform was deserted. He ran across the platform into the almost empty waiting room. Not there. Then, through the large open window under a street lamp, he saw her just as she turned a corner out of sight. But when he reached the corner, the street was empty, except for a mist that hung like a ghost over the pavement. He ran on, his mind frantic with terror and haste. Then, ahead, like fuzzy balls of flame in the night, he saw two rows of lights shining dimly over the curving span of a bridge. He strained his eyes to the misty darkness. His ear was taut for sound. Then, ahead, lying forlorn and solitary on the bridge, he saw a girl's polo coat and a blue bag and a pocketbook. He held onto the rail and looked down into the dizzy darkness of the river. His mind was spinning. He felt helpless and lost, like a child. For a moment, he stood listening to the swiftly moving river. And at last, slowly, he took up the polo coat and the blue beret and the pocketbook and started back through the heavy fog.
Hello, Merrill. This is Inspector Jones, headquarters. Fellow here says a woman jumped off the North Bridge about 15 minutes ago. Better get the riverboats looking for her. Okay? Okay. Well, the boats will pick her up, Miss Holland.
Oh, I had been sure. I could have stopped her. She was too young.
Here, let's have a look at this pocketbook. Mm-hmm. Usual thing. Lipstick, compact, change purse. And here's a note addressed to Iris Martin. Signed by somebody named Maestro. She mentioned him?
No. I like some music, teacher. Lawrence Blaine.
Mm-hmm. Iris, I'm determined. Tonight at the second intermission, do not try to stop me. Be ready to sing. Maestro, does this mean anything to you?
Nothing at all.
Probably has something to do with a suicide. It may be important.
Inspector, I have an appointment. I'd like to go.
Okay, Mr. Holland. But you'll have to identify the body. When we find it, I'll get in touch with you. As a matter of fact, this case can stand investigation. From this note, it looks to me like something more than suicide.
Kirk Holland stood for a moment on the sidewalk outside the police station. She had asked him to do an errand. He looked at his watch and started down the street toward the railway station. Now his destination was not unknown.
Is this the stage door of the opera house?
Yep. What you want?
I'd like to see a man named Lawrence Blaine.
Nobody's allowed backstage.
But it's about Iris Martin. She asked me...
Miss Martin? Well, that gentleman, he's been looking all over town for her. Down the hall there. See those two men? The white-haired ones, Mr. Blaine.
Thanks.
1 minute.
Second acting, 1 minute.
Leave me alone, Barrio.
1 minute.
I tell you, I've called everyone.
But how could you let her out of your sight? She was upset, nervous.
Oh, on stage, everybody. On stage.
Oh, Mr. Blaine?
Yes?
I have a message for you. It's from Miss Martin.
From Miss Martin? What is it? I'm Antonio Barrio.
The message is from Mr. Blaine.
Where is she? They've been frantic trying to find her.
On stage, Mr. Barrio. The curtain's waiting.
All right. I'm coming.
Please, Mr. Barrio. On stage.
Maestro. Wait in my dressing room. I'll be back in 20 minutes. Please. Where is Miss Martin? Why did she run away like this?
I have bad news for you, Mr. Blaine.
Bad news? What bad news? What's happened?
Mr. Blaine, she drowned herself in the North River on Clarkson. They're searching for her body now.
Drowned? No. Oh, Iris, my child, what have I done to you?
Laurence Blaine's face was gaunt and pale. He stood like a dumb man. And remembering what the girl Iris had told him, Kirk took the old man's arm and led him out the stage door. He hailed a taxi, and when they reached the Maestro studio, the old man sank in a large, easy chair, staring ahead into an empty future. Then he began to speak.
Mr. Holland, this girl was my life. She was like my own child. I loved her with all my heart. I taught her to sing. I taught her to use the magic of her voice. And it was incomparable magic. Look at me, Mr. Holland. Look at an old man whose love outweighed his good sense.
I understand, Mr. Blaine.
But it was my dream that Iris be great. Greater than any singer who ever lived. That dream was my only reason for living. And nothing should stand in its way. Not even Madame Zadrini.
Madame Zadrini?
Yes. She knew the greatness of Iris' voice. She knew my Iris could surpass her. And she was determined Iris never have that chance. That is why I planned to kill her.
Oh. And Miss Martin knew what you planned?
I was mad to even think of it. But it was the only way, Mr. Holland. The only way I could convince Iris of her greatness. To have her seen in Madame Zadrini's place. Now it is too late. Too late.
Maestro. Maestro, a terrible thing is...
Please, please, Mr. Varro, you're not exciting.
This is no time for pampering. Something terrible has happened at the opera, Maestro.
What is it, Varro?
When the call came after the second intermission, Madame Zadrini did not appear. They found her in the dressing room, murdered. Where the place was in an uproar. I will tell you, there was no understudy. They were calling frantically for Iris.
Varro, you mean Madame Zadrini... How did she die?
Poison, they said. Poison. I do not know more than that. But where is Iris? This man said he brought you a message from her.
Yes. But Iris is dead.
Dead? What are you saying?
It is true, Mr. Vario. Miss Martin drowned herself.
Then it was you who killed her, Maestro. You.
Please, Mr. Vario.
He wrote her a note telling her what he planned to do. He planned to murder Madame Zadrini. Iris told me all about it. Maestro. Then you did kill her.
No, Vario, I didn't. I didn't, I tell you.
And Iris killed herself to keep you from it. Maestro, Maestro, the police. They will find out that they...
The police already know. They have the note. It was in her pocketbook. That note is incriminating, Mr. Blaine. I read it.
My poor Iris. As you say, Vario, she killed herself to save me. And now, with a little piece of paper she left behind, she condemns me for a crime I didn't commit.
Condemned for a crime he didn't commit. God, I hate when that happens.
Now we have to look for the one-armed man.
And dynamite. Right. And poison.
And quicksand.
And quicksand. Bionic Sasquatches.
I like Angel's idea. It's a great punk rock name.
The Bionic Sasquatches. Oh. Yeah, it was Andre the Giant and... I think the guy from that was Lurch, Ted Cassidy, maybe?
Ted Cassidy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait. Ted. Yeah, that's right. Yes. They
yeah,
were
Ted
both,
Cassidy was Lurch.
Yes. I think they both were Bionic Sasquatch on the $6 Million Man and the crossover on the Bionic Woman TV
Could
programs
be.
Way back when.
You know, what's funny is I did watch on one of those channels, one that Dale just, Roku channel, Dale just led off to me. I watched the original pilot episode of The $6 Million Man. And in that, the part of what would be in the series, Oscar Goldman, which is by Richard Anderson, that was played by Darren McGavin. Yet the two of them worked together in
Ooh.
The Night Strangler as...
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, because Darren McGavin was Kolchak, and of course Richard Anderson in that particular movie was the guy that was living for the Civil War surgeon that was living forever. Yeah.
Yes, in the underground city, I remember that was so crazy.
Underground city of Seattle, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was
as one would expect.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Where would an immortal surgeon live but in an underground city?
I don't know that. So I don't know that after the pilot, Darren McGavin turned down the role, or whether they just recast it, as they do many times when they went to the series.
Well, that, and after the pilot, they also made some adjustments. They forgot to give him a foot in the pilot. They forgot to give him a bionic foot. You know,
he's hopping around going, got to get a foot over here.
They tried baby carriage wheels and casters from under a desk. None of it was working.
Yeah,
so
nothing worked. Nothing. Yeah.
They figured, bionic leg. Yeah, that's the way to go.
You know, what they were thinking. The reason they did that, because they were thinking, you know, motorized roller skate was the first thought there. You know, because you know, then you really get those bionics moving with a jet roller skate on there.
Yeah. Which you can get from Acme.
I think that was done in Blue Falcon and it didn't work out well or something.
Yeah.
I know those roller skates somewhere. I can't remember where, but I know the company is Acme.
The crazy skate birds, they had roller skates. Oh, man. Yeah. Need more dynamite.
Yes.
Made very popular by Jimmy Walker saying dynamite. It was still, you know, needed in the 70s. So,
yeah, I never really understood that catchphrase. I just didn't.
He
really
was pleading for more dynamite. Some people need cowbell.
Thank you.
He needed dynamite.
I never understood it till now. So educational.
Yes.
This show is so educational.
My head hurts.
My brain hurts.
My brain hurts. And that's why we
hearing me
more cowbell.
More cowbell. All right, let's wrap up Haunting Hour.
Or Haunting Nap
Hour.
Haunting 22 minutes and 58 seconds. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. With Destination Unknown. We'll be back.
One night, Kirk Holland obeyed his impulse to talk to a girl he saw crying in the window of the night train from New York. Her name was Iris Martin. When she left the train, Kirk followed to discover she had drowned herself in the North River. Kirk went to New York to tell Lawrence Blaine, the girl singing teacher, of Iris Martin's suicide. Later, in Blaine's studio, Antonio Vario, an opera star, appeared to say that Madame Zadrini had been murdered. Because of an incriminating note written by Blaine indicating he would kill Madame Zadrini so Iris might sing in her stead, a note the police found in the pocketbook of Iris Martin, Lawrence Blaine was arrested for the murder of Madame Zadrini. Kirk Holland went back to Amesville. During the following weeks, he walked the shaded streets of the town, and in his mind flashed images of Iris Martin. Sometimes in his sleep, he awoke calling the dead girl's name. When Lawrence Blaine was brought to trial, he testified for the aging man and listened as the district attorney said,
"Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I ask you to consider the evidence. You have heard the analysis. Arsenic in Anna Zadrini's body and in the dregs of her teacup. Tea that she drank during the second intermission in her dressing room. Consider, then, that this murderer was a man of shrewd intelligence. Do not be deceived by the absurd plea of the defense that because Iris Martin was dead, Lawrence Blaine had no motive for murder. Remember, this fiendish little man was sick with hatred for Anna Zadrini. That's the reason he stole into her dressing room in the afternoon of that black day and placed the poison in those tea bags. Ladies and gentlemen, I demand the maximum penalty for Lawrence Blaine. Murder in the first degree."
"Before I pass sentence on you, Lawrence Blaine, have you anything to say to the court?"
"Nothing, Your Honor."
"Then it is my duty as judge of this high court of justice to sentence you, Lawrence Blaine, to die in the electric chair on the last day of October."
So Lawrence Blaine was sentenced to die. That afternoon in the city prison, Kirk Holland stepped into the dark cell
to find Antonio Vario talking to the condemned man.
Good afternoon, Vario. Hello, Mr. Blaine.
Mr. Holland, what can we do? There must be something we can do for him.
There is nothing, Vario. And what does it matter now? What does it matter?
Have they found a body, Mr. Holland? You've kept in touch with the police in Clarkston.
They found no trace of it, Vario.
Then we must get lawyers for you, Maestro. Good lawyers who will appeal to the governor.
Yes, yes, there's still a chance. It doesn't matter, I tell you. What reason do I have to live now? I'm an old man. My time has come. And Iris is dead. Without Iris, there is no reason to live.
I know, Maestro. I know. There is something I've never told you.
What, Vario?
I loved her, too. I had asked her to marry me a day or two before she died.
You, Vario?
Yes, yes. I would have done anything for her. Anything.
In the week that followed, the governor refused a reprieve for Laurent Blaine. Kirk went back to Amesville. The week passed. Finally, the day came when Laurent Blaine was to die. Kirk left his bookshop that night and walked the wide streets of the little town. With every step, he walked deeper into the shadowy presence of Iris. She was everywhere. She was not dead, but she was alive in his mind. There was the tilt of her head, a small, round face, a sad smile. Now and then he was sure he saw her. Iris just turning a corner ahead. Iris standing alone under the glow of the street lamp. But it was only the ghost of a memory. A memory he loved. It was this memory and his desire to be close to where she had been that led him to the station that evening. A winter's cold rain had begun to fall, and through it, out of the darkness, came the black engine, out of a cloud of white steam, moving slowly past the shed. The mail car, a coach, and another. Kirk felt his body tingle. Then, directly before him, framed in the misty window,
Iris! Iris!
He bounded under the car, pushed open the door, and stood transfixed in the aisle as she half rose from her seat with a little cry.
Mr. Holland.
Iris Martin, it's you.
All the way I've been hoping, wishing for you, and you came.
I can't believe it. Where have you been? We thought you were dead.
I know. I was in Canada, miles away from anything. I didn't know what happened till yesterday. I saw a newspaper in the village store.
And you know Mr. Blaine has been convicted of murder.
And he's innocent. I know he is. Come with me to help him, Mr. Holland.
Oh, you couldn't keep me away.
I've got to save him. There's something I know that may save him. Oh, please, help me again.
I will, Iris.
You see, I thought if everyone believed me dead, it was the only way I could think of to keep him from killing her. He was doing it for me, and I couldn't stop him.
I know. He told me.
Oh, can you ever forgive me, Mr. Holland? That night on the train, when you spoke to me, I needed somebody to send back to New York to tell the maestro I was dead before you could commit this crime. So I used you. I thank you now for what you did.
Nothing matters except that you're alive.
Oh, take me to somebody in authority, to the district attorney. You see, I know who murdered Madame Zagrini, and there's only one way to prove it.
Hello?
Mario, this is Kurt Holland.
Yes, yes, what is it?
I have some news for you, good news.
The reprieve?
No, it's about Iris Martin.
Have they found her body?
Yes, she's alive, Mario.
What?
It's true. We're on our way now to the district attorney's office. He asked me to call you. He wants you to come down to the DA's office right away.
I can't believe it.
Will you be there?
Of course, right away, right away.
Well, I must say, Miss Martin, your appearance is dramatic, to say the least. But as district attorney, I can't see from what you've told me how your evidence will clear Lawrence Blaine.
But I told you, I have no proof.
Can't you stay the execution for a day or two till we can get the proof?
Well, it's very irregular.
But with Vario's help and a little time, I'm sure I can prove the maestro innocent. Oh, please, he'll be here any minute. Give us the chance.
If you'd tell me what you have in mind, Miss Martin, maybe the governor would intervene, but... Well, frankly, I couldn't call him with the scanty information you've given me. Why, you were miles away when the murder was done.
Was I? How do you know I was?
Iris, this is magnificent. I can't believe it.
I'm glad to hear, Vario.
My dear, what can I say? I missed you more than you'll ever know.
Thank you, Vario.
Why did you do this to us? Why?
I'll explain to you later. Right now, Vario, we've got to do everything we can to save the maestro. We have to tell the truth.
What truth?
Vario here will back me up when I tell you that at rehearsal, on the afternoon of the day Madame Zadrini was murdered, she used the last of her imported keys.
Ida, is that right, Mr. Vario?
Yes, that is right.
Vario was standing with me when Madame Zadrini asked me to lend her a few bags of keys for my dressing room. That's true, isn't it, Vario?
Ida, what are you... Yes, yes, that is true.
So you see, the tea that murdered Madame Zadrini was tea she borrowed from me.
You mean...
No, she doesn't mean that. Iris, what are you saying?
Lawrence Blaine did not commit the murder. Vario was trying to protect me, but he knows quite well that I poisoned the tea bags. I killed Madame Zadrini.
Iris, but that's not true. She's only saying that because
Vario loves me. He'd do anything to keep you from knowing. He'd let the maestro die to save me.
Is what she says true, Mr. Vario?
I don't know. Iris, what have you done?
The only thing I could do, Vario, to save the maestro's life.
But it doesn't make sense.
Will you sign this confession, Miss Martin?
Yes. Yes, I'll sign anything. Only call the prison before it's too late.
Iris, tell them the truth.
I have told them.
No, she's lied. She did not do it. It was I who killed Madame Zadrini.
I did it for you, Iris, because I've loved you for a long time. But it was the maestro who kept you from me. He was so cautious of where you went, whom you knew. And then, when I discovered he himself was planning to kill Madame Zadrini, when he had written such an incriminating note, I took over to make sure he would be convicted. I was planning to tell the police about the note. But when they found it in your purse, and when you yourself were supposedly dead,
You've said enough, Ario. You've almost allowed an innocent man to die for your own crime. Hello, this is the district attorney. Get me the governor's mansion and hurry. And tell Patrolman Hicks to bring a police car to the front door. He's to take a Miss Martin and a Mr. Holland to Southgate Prison. Lawrence Blaine is a free man.
How did you know it was Vario who killed her?
Well, I didn't suspect him, but I knew Madame Zadrini had borrowed some keys from him. I heard her ask him for it.
Well, it's over now. Now everything will be just as the maestro wanted it. You will sing. You'll be a great star.
No, Kate. No, because I don't want to be. I've never wanted to be, really.
Then what will you do?
I don't know. That'll come later.
Iris, the first night I saw you in the window of the train, I had a sudden impulse to know you. That's why I climbed aboard. If you hadn't come back, I'd have spent the rest of my life in love with you.
With a ghost?
With a brief memory. Now I have another impulse. Maybe to take you in my arms. Maybe to kiss you.
And you always obey your impulses?
From now on, I do.
Well, that was an abrupt ending to our second feature, the Humping Hour. It just died. Just like, I'm done.
Yeah, well, again, they cut it off for the local radio broadcast, and
right,
they didn't have much choice on that.
No, we still have more.
For more, here's Gar with tonight's second moral of the story.
Even killing with poison requires marksmanship. There you go.
Yes, indeed it does.
I never thought of it that way.
Well, yeah, because that other... I didn't get... Okay, so the tea bag that they got because they ran out of the imported one, came from the young girl, and so someone was trying to poison her, I guess. Yeah, I was a little, so marksmanship, that's what I got out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Weird.
Very cleverly put.
And the girl in the story was like 16, and the guy was like macking on her in the at the train, like, there's that girl, I must go see her. And it's like, No, she's like 16. Leave her alone, you know? I mean,
yeah,
well,
yeah,
you know, but that's Hollywood. You know, that's Hollywood. Hollywood worked that way.
And it was, what, 1948? What?
Still does.
Like 1946.
Maybe.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
We changed our standards, you know. It wasn't, you know. and couldn't have that.
That's right.
16-year-old bride.
That's right. She has to be at least 15 now. So you know. 16,
or what's it called? 16, where they legally emancipate themselves or something. I don't know.
Yeah, if you divorce your parents or something, I don't know.
Yeah. There's so many options for the young today that we never had.
Yeah, we should have had it so good, huh?
I know. We only had dynamite. We only had dynamite and quicksand and Sasquatch. And
Now, I didn't have dynamite, but we had lots of boom booms over there.
You had boom booms. That's right, yeah.
We had lots of boom booms.
That was crazy sidebar in the dynamite was Burt Ward was talking about when he, the first week he was cast as Robin in one of the bat traps. He said he knew it was going to be a bad day when the people that took care of the special effects came in and he could smell liquor on their breath, and they used two sticks of dynamite to actually blow out a wall. They caught it on tape. It was great, but, you know, it was dangerous.
Yeah. It's also not recommended in dentistry, but...
Well, you know, you do what you got to do.
Yeah.
That should come with that should come with the tag, do not do this at home. We are professional idiots.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yuck, 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 yuck.
Yuck, yuck, yuck,
dynamite and dentistry. Yeah, baby. Yeah. I can see the poster now.
Well, you remember the Tick? I'm the midnight bomber that bombs at midnight. I love that guy. I don't know if you're familiar with the Tick cartoon from way back when, but...
Yeah, I was running around the same time as Freakazoid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that midnight bomber was just hilarious. I'm the midnight bomber that bombs at midnight. Love that guy.
You know,
as opposed to when else would a midnight bomber bomb?
I don't know. The 11 o'clock bomber. I don't know. What are you going to do?
11.
Film at 11. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
10:47.
I was looking at the CW comment. Yes, they can unload their parents, but then you think of poor Britney Spears who took 31. She was 31 before she finally emancipated from her parents, something like that.
I don't. Okay, I'm not following any of that. I thought someone committed her, and they said no. You're not mentally stable enough to do this. And now she's mentally stable enough. I didn't know. I don't know what the story is. Not following the Britney. I thought she lost it. We need to tie her down. Maybe give her some dynamite juice or something.
Dynamite juice. Because they're juice for now. Juice forms now.
Hey, certain things are coming in pills. It'll come in a juice. Yeah, there you go. Be in a sippy cup. next up
careful
on our circle.
Careful
is
where you spit. Yeah.
The weird
careful
circle. And I really enjoy the weird circle because it's so weird. But
and
it
circular.
Really does sound fun.
It was one of those syndicated. It was one of the syndicated series out of the RCA archives. And so wherever they were at, they were had different sponsors. Like one affiliate had several stations across the country was the Ogden Fine Cut Tobacco sponsorship of the Weird Circle, known as packages Ogden's Playhouse. Ogden's Playhouse didn't air the run in the transcription order either. Over the U.S., it aired featured under the Ogden Playhouse banner as well. In Canada, Ogden's Playhouse aired the Weird Circle series without other intervening productions, but other sponsors of note for Weird Circle was Far Ice Cream Company on the West Coast, and who couldn't use more ice cream? The 7-Up Company in Arizona and the Ramar's Bread on the West Coast.
You
had the bread and the ice cream on the West Coast, so I guess that was for the ice cream sandwiches, you see.
Yes. And if you pour a little soda on it, you got to float. There you go. And let's float our way on to part one of the Weird Circle. This is called the 415 Express. And it's from...
air date, December 4th, 1943.
An ill wind blows away the present and returns man's mind to the horrors of a world gone by. Listen to the weird circle. Speak again the immortal tale, the 4:15 Express.
This is a report to the acting chairman of the East Anglian Railroad Company from William Langford, special agent. Return from Russia per your instructions to investigate one John Dwerrihouse and the matter of £75,000 missing from the East Anglian Railroad. I learned that Dwerrihouse was preparing to leave Friday, October the 14th, on the 4:15 express to Clayborough. I made plans to be on the same train by arranging with my friends, the Jelfs, to spend the weekend with them in Clayborough. Arrived at London Station, and as I was standing just outside of the train...
Hi, Diana. Diana Winter.
Langford, what are you doing here? The last I heard of you was when you were in Russia, weren't you?
Very definitely in Russia. I could tell by the snow. I arrived back in London only last week.
Bill Langford, I'd like you to meet my mother, Mrs. Winters.
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Winters?
How do you do? Oh, my hay fever. Trains give me hay fever every time. They have the Russian climate for hay fever sufferers.
Just about the same as everywhere else.
Well, not like London. There ought to be a law against London winters. Where are you headed for, Bill?
Clayborough. I'm going to spend the holidays with Pete Jelf at his country place down there. His wife Lydia is in London just now. As a matter of fact, she's supposed to take the train down with me. Do you know her?
I met her last winter during the social whirl.
Oh, then why don't you join us in my compartment later?
Oh, I'd love to. What compartment will you be in?
42A.
Really?
Well, what's so surprising about 42A?
Well, they usually don't use it. It's supposed to be... You laugh at me, but it's haunted.
Nonsense.
Oh, ghosts make me sneeze.
Tell me, how do you know compartment 42 is haunted?
Well, they say a man was killed there 10 years ago. His name was Jones. And his rather angry spiritual self is supposedly lingering around for the purpose of scaring people out of their wits.
Oh, that's fine. Just fine.
Our compartment's in the same car just up the line. I'll drop in and see you later after I get Mother settled.
Yes, do that. Oh, gosh, I hope Lydia makes the train.
Well, she probably won't.
You're so right.
Well, if you see the ghost, ask him to stick around. I'd like to meet him. Oh, Jones.
See you later, Diana. We'd better get in.
Goodbye.
Well, it's going to be a dreary trip, me and the ghost sharing a compartment. Oh, hello. I didn't know I was going to have a companion in 42A.
Something strange about a companion in 42A?
No, it's just that I expected to see a ghost.
Oh.
I missed the train. I was afraid she would.
Mm-hmm. Did you say something?
No, nothing. Oh, by the way, the name's Langford. Bill Langford, sir. And yours?
Jones. John Jones.
Jones?
Jones.
Oh?
Something the matter with the name Jones?
No, is there?
No.
One meets so many Jones these days.
Does one?
Yes, one does.
Oh.
It's just that you weren't very certain of it.
I see that you've just come back from Russia.
Oh, how did you know that?
The labels on your suitcase. I've done some extensive traveling myself.
Well, you're very discerning, Mr. Jones.
I'm a collector of curios. A hobby, you know. I've picked up quite a few interesting things in Russia.
Really? Oh, then I have something that would probably interest you that I got there.
Oh?
It's a gift for a friend of mine. It was an ancient Cossack money wallet, which has now been converted to a cigarette case.
Oh, very interesting. Have you got it on you?
Yes, of course. It's wrapped up. But I can unwrap it. It's in my pocket. Here it is.
Oh, say, that's very interesting. May I examine it?
Oh, yes, of course you may.
Tremendous thing to carry about. The money must have gone in here, in the back flap.
Yes, yes, it did.
Hmm. Sort of combination wallet and cigarette case.
Well, except if you ever put money in there, you'd have a devil of a time fishing it out.
Quite right, quite right. You know, it's an old Russian custom to put a cigarette in a new cigarette case before giving it to anyone.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes. Here, let me put one of mine in for you.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, there you are. A special brand of cigarette for a special case. You mustn't mind my hand. I'm particularly jumpy this evening. Nervous, you know. Here's your case, sir.
Oh, thank you. I'll wrap it up again.
My mind is getting cramped. A little stroll is what I need. Would you mind watching my suitcase for me? I'll be back in a few seconds.
Well, certainly, Mr. Jones.
These compartment trains are such narrow aisles. It really isn't a stroll at all. It's like pushing through a tunnel.
Hmm. Peculiar fellow.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Poor Jill. Wait until I tell him his wife missed the train.
I'll see you around later. Hello, Bill.
Come on in, Diana.
Oh, thanks. I got Mother comfortably settled finally. Where's Lydia Jill?
Oh, missed the train. Unless she's in another compartment. And I'm not up to hunting for her.
I don't blame you.
Well, Diana, I see you know the man who shares my compartment with me, Mr. Jones.
Do I?
Yes, you chatted with him in the hallway.
I talked to the man in the next compartment.
I thought I heard you talk to Jones.
No, that's the man in the next compartment. His name is Augustus Rakes. You know him.
But, didn't you pass a man coming through?
No.
That's impossible.
Why?
Because John Jones got up and left the compartment as you came in. I heard you talk to... Wait a minute. Let me go out and try and get him. I'm not going crazy yet. Mr. Jones! Mr. Jones! Mr. Jones! Mr. Jones! I'm positive... Well, if you don't believe me...
Don't get so excited, Bill. If you say he was here, he was here. I might have missed him coming through.
But you couldn't have missed him. He left just as you came in. His suitcase is right over my... Well, it was there. I knew it was there. I remember his putting it there.
Maybe you saw the ghost. Oh, Bill, how unfair of you. You told me you'd hold him if you found him.
Ghost, Diana, I
swear... Bill Langford, it... Oh, Bill!
Lydia, when did you get in the train?
Oh, I almost missed it. It was too dreadful. Oh, that's me every time. Hello, Diana.
Hello, Lydia. How are you?
Congested. But then everybody's congested this year. It's fashionable. Bill, darling, it's been ghastly, just ghastly. I searched every single compartment of the train looking for you.
Lydia, did you pass a man in the hall as you came through?
I'm married.
I mean in this car with a gray tweed suit and red tie, sort of an old-fashioned bowler hat. Moustache, very heavy moustache.
No.
And he walked with a limp.
Oh, well, honestly, Bill, I haven't passed anybody in this train in the last three cars. Everybody was sitting down. Oh, I did pass a lot of men way up a whole convention of them.
No, he wouldn't have had time to walk up more than two cars by the time... Diana, are you positive?
Absolutely. If you don't believe me, ask somebody else. Try Augustus Rakes, the next compartment.
I don't mind if I do. Pardon me for a moment, will you?
No, I haven't seen you in ages, Diana.
Yes, it's been a very long time. Very long.
Well, how did you like the season in London last
year? Oh, it was all right. I don't do much of the social world.
Mr. Rakes?
Yes?
I know you don't know me, but I'm Bill Langford, a friend of Diana Winters.
Oh.
I'm just looking for the... Well, for the man who shares my compartment. He walked down the passageway a few minutes ago and seems to have disappeared. He passed by your window.
Nobody but two women have passed by. Diana Winters and another girl.
I saw him walk towards your compartment. At least he turned in your direction.
I wouldn't be sure, of course. I might have been looking in the other direction. But I didn't see anybody.
Huh. Oh, thanks. Do you know who's in the compartment next to you?
No. No, I don't.
Well, I might just as well ask them.
Of course, of course. Do. And if I can help you find your friend, call on me, won't you?
Hmm. That's strange. I wonder... Oh. There's four people in this compartment.
Come in.
I'm sorry, everybody, but a friend of mine has disappeared.
Oh, disappeared?
Did anybody see a man in a gray suit pass this way about 10 minutes ago? Gray suit and red tie, bowler hat, moustache.
No.
No, I was looking out the window.
I was sleeping.
No, not me. I was standing at the door and certainly have seen him.
Standing at the door for the past 10 minutes?
Rather, all the time, right at the door. I did see two women pass.
How about you, mister?
Who, me? I didn't see nothing. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I'm just curious.
My name's Farrell. I'm a prize fighter, mister. And if you got any difference of opinion with me, I'd be glad to discuss it with you in my way.
Oh, no difference at all. Well, I guess I'd better forget the whole thing. Return to my compartment and relax.
Well, they think it's all goes down. How exciting.
Well, not that I know, but I wonder. He was so certain of it, Lydia.
Strangest thing I've ever heard. Of course, everybody knows the East Anglian aren't haunted.
Well, at least that's what they say. Oh, hello, Bill. Find any trace of your ghost?
No trace at all.
Oh.
It's disappeared from the face of the earth. That is, if he were here at all.
Oh, come. You don't believe that story about ghosts I told you.
Maybe. Only if John Jones was a ghost, he was the strangest ghost I ever met. And somehow I just don't believe
ghost train.
I would think there'd be quite a bit of ghosts on trains. Why not?
There should be if there's not.
Yes.
Well, there certainly should be along the old canals. I think that there should be a lot of ghosts along the old canals. I know we have them here in Ohio and in New York as well. Because from what I understand, when I took that ghost train a ride, where they told ghost stories throughout the train about different sightings of ghosts, one thing that happens when they were making the canals, what happened when somebody got sick and died? Well, they just buried them along the side there, dug a trench and threw them in and moving forward. Yeah. So you'd think that there would be some ghosts right along the old canalways, you would think.
Yep. Ghosts of hobos.
From what I understand, the Great Wall of China is loaded with corpses. If you died, they just mudded you into the wall.
You're part of the wall.
Yeah.
You are now special. Great.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Oh, hey, we got a... Oh, on Sector 47, we got a weak spot. Did anybody dying this week?
Yeah.
give me a minute.
I feel better.
Nope, he's dead. Come with me, mate.
Bring out your hand.
always like that.
I feel better.
You're not fooling anyone. You're not fooling anyone.
That's right. You heard part of the script on this was the woman on the train said, I'm congested, but it's fashionable these days. Whatever that's about.
I don't know.
Really? Okay.
It's a busy week.
I get it. Think about it.
How fitting with our times.
Too soon?
Yeah, I know. I can't smell. Oh, it's okay. It's fashionable these days.
That's right.
Lost my sense of smell. I feel a bit faint. All right.
I'm kidding.
Well, it could be that they use this snuff. Maybe it was an excuse to use snuff by saying that.
I don't know if the women
it.
Use snuff.
Oh,
though.
That could be.
But did the women? I think it was a manly thing to use. I don't think the women were doing it.
Sounds like a rather sexist thing.
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're selling snuff, you want to sell it to everybody, right? You know.
That's right.
Hey,
I'll
bet you Marie Antoinette was hitting the nose candy. Come on.
Wow, she hit the neck candy. Oh.
Nose candy goes with cake, you know.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh.
But nose gremlins.
Off with my nose. not sure.
Oh, boy, we got a lot of radio and a lot of time.
I don't,
so who knows? We might even have time for a feature later. You never know.
Ooh.
There you go. The Angel's grandmother dipped snuff. There you go.
Oh, well, there you go.
This show is educational.
She might have been an avant-garde grandmother, though. I bet she could probably...
May have been.
Or she might have been, you know, a brawler, too. She might have, you know...
yep.
Been in the ring, taking out a few guys, you know.
Tough like Granny Clampett, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nobody messed with Granny Clampett.
Nobody messed with her.
I think Granny Clampett had a pipe, maybe. I don't know. I forget.
Sometimes I wondered what she put in it. Let's wrap up, Weird Circle, with the 415 Express. We'll be back. I swear.
So you say.
Well, Bill, if John Jones was on this train, he'll come back. Nothing to get so excited about.
Nothing to get excited about. The bloke vanishes in front of my eyes, and I'm supposed to be calm?
Oh, ghosts are such fun, Bill. And not that I've ever known one intimately, but we had a ghost party last year at the Crawfish.
Tickets, please, tickets. Let me see. Mrs. Jelf in this compartment and a Mr. Langford.
I'm Mrs. Jelf. Here you are.
I'm Miss Winters. I'm in compartment 3 down the line. My mother has my ticket.
Mm-hmm. Quite so, madam. And about you, Mr. Langford?
Oh, here you are, conductor. Have you got a list of reservations in this car?
The East Anglian Line has a policy of always reserving all seats in advance.
Good. Have you got that list with you?
Naturally.
How many people were supposed to be traveling in this compartment?
2. Mrs. Peter Jelf and Mr. Langford, I believe. That's what I just said.
Mm-hmm. How about Mr. Jones?
No, Mr. Jones. There's been only one Mr. Jones on this line. He died in this compartment 10 years ago, and he's been a ghost ever since.
Well, I tell you, of very flesh and blood, John Jones was sitting with me earlier this evening. Yes, I even got a cigarette he gave me. It's a special brand. I got it here in my cigarette case.
What? In what cigarette case?
Right in here, conductor. No, this is really a present I bought for your husband, Lydia.
Oh.
Yes, a Russian curio. Tremendous thing. I showed it to Jones, and he put a cigarette in it.
Oh, how cute. Let's see.
Here you are.
Oh, but there is a cigarette in here. Want to see, Diana?
I'd love to. What does this prove, Bill?
Well, I don't smoke, and Mr. Jones gave it to me.
You've either seen a cigarette-smoking ghost, mister, or perhaps you need a long rest. Tickets, please.
I'm not crazy.
Maybe Russia was bad for you. I knew of a person who lived in Russia once who killed his mother-in-law 2 years later.
May I have my cigarette case back, Lydia?
Oh, sorry, Bill. Through looking at it, darling?
Oh, no, sure. I wonder how Mother's getting along. I better go back and see her.
Oh, I've got Nicola with you. I want to drop back to the smoking compartment. Perhaps, Mr. Jones is back there.
Good place for a cigarette-smoking ghost.
Oh, just before the main hall.
Hello, Augustus Rakes. Still standing in the corridor?
I get restless sitting down, Diana.
Well, I want you to meet a friend of mine, Augustus Rakes. This is Lydia Jelf.
How do you do?
Hello.
I'll see you folks later. I'm going to take a quick look at the smoking compartment.
What for, Mr. Langford?
Well, believe it or not, for a ghost. And I'm not kidding. Maybe the ghost is real and I'm kidding myself. Who knows? This is the smoking compartment, I guess?
I beg pardon. May I get by?
Oh, sure, conductor. Wait till I take a deep breath.
Where are you going?
To the smoking compartment. Any objections?
No, none that I can think of at any rate.
I wish I had a little cooperation.
You don't need cooperation, sir. You need a long rest. Yes, I'll see you later, Mr. Langford.
I can't wait. Well, if this isn't the strangest setup, I'm positive I saw Jones and another ghost. Well, I don't know. The last possible place it could be would be the...
It must be this door. Jones? Jones? Jones?
My name's not Jones. You know that, Langford. They help me, Langford.
I know who you are. Mr. John Dwerrihouse.
The money. The money.
It's safe. I saw you stick it in my wallet when you put the cigarette in there. How did you expect to get it back?
I was going to borrow my cigarette back.
Hmm?
The minute I saw they were on the train, I knew it was dangerous to carry it with me.
Here, let me help you. Get out of here.
The lights have gone out.
Why are you...
Take your head off me.
Now, for you, Mr. John Jones Dwerrihouse, you're going to be a real ghost if you don't start talking. Where is that money?
To exercise on trains, Lydia. I wouldn't worry about
that. No, I don't like the way people keep disappearing. Your mother and Bill and there's that girl.
Well, if you're so worried about Bill, we'll send the conductor to the smoking compartment for him.
I am worried about him. He's not well, that's odd.
Oh, stop it, Lydia. Wait till I press the button for the conductor.
Bill always was a little, well, shall we say unsound at times.
Hello, Lydia Joe.
Hi, Farrell. How nice to see you. Farrell, meet Diana Winters. Farrell's a prize fighter, Diana, and a most exciting one. Have you seen Bill?
How do you do?
Hello, good-looking.
Oh, dear, you look just the way girls look every time you look to Diana.
Oh, Lydia.
What are you doing in this train, Farrell? I didn't expect to see you.
If you don't ask questions, Mrs. Jelf, you don't get no lies.
Oh, fewer words than ever spoken. Were they, Diana?
I wouldn't know.
Well, ladies, did you call for me?
Yes, conductor. I'm worried about Mr. Langford. He went to the smoking compartment a half hour ago, and he hasn't returned.
Perhaps he's disappeared, too.
Langford's disappeared so soon?
Oh, yes. Oh, you know him, don't you, Farrell?
Maybe I do, and maybe I don't.
And Lydia, stop stargazing out that open window.
Stargazing? Fuck out that window.
It's an upside-down face.
It's a ghost. The ghost smiling at a smart side. Look, conductor.
All right, Mrs. Bell, now you just stay seated here in Mrs. Winter's compartment.
I saw the ghost, conductor.
Maybe you did, and maybe you didn't.
Hey, what's going on in here, Diana?
Oh, come in, Augustus. Lydia claims she saw a ghost, a face suspended outside the window.
Nonsense. There are no ghosts, Mrs. Bell.
I saw him.
Now, come along, gentlemen. Langford has disappeared now. Follow me. They say he last said he was going into smoking compartment. Here we are. Come in, gentlemen. Oh, Langford.
Look, conductor.
Huh? My word.
Well, Mrs. Winters, she's dead.
Dead as a dormouse. And Langford isn't anywhere around.
Langford probably killed her and then skipped off the train. Don't you agree, Mr. Rakes?
What makes you say that, Farrell?
The window's open.
Yes, the window is open.
Well, come on, conductor. Give me a hand with Mrs. Winters. We've got to break the bad news to Diana sooner or later.
Yes, quite right, Mr. Riggs, quite right. I'll help you carry her.
Imagine anybody bumping off a nice old lady.
Well, whoever did it used a nice long knife in her back.
Maybe the ghost.
Ghosts don't kill people. They just scare them. Come on, Mr. Riggs. We'll better carry her back.
Why in the world would anyone want to kill Mom? Rakes, did you?
Did I what, Diana? What do we do about Langford, conductor?
We send out a warrant for his arrest as soon as the train stops. I don't know why he did it, but we'll find out.
If I ever see him again, I'll punch his face in.
Look, Phil Langford climbing down from the top of the car into the window.
All right, all of you. Keep your hands raised while I get in this window.
Oh.
Now, it's no use, Langford. We know you killed Mrs. Winters.
Keep them up, conductor. Keep them up. And you, Rick, don't pull any funny business. Farrell, watch him.
Sure, boss.
Boss?
Sure. I work for Bill Langford. I've worked for Bill for 8 years, ever since he picked me up in America when I was a bum.
The fuck?
You murderers. Murderers.
Stand still, all of you.
Let me go,
don't
Bill.
Don't try to escape, Rick. I'm a strong guy. Do I have to prove it?
Well, both of you have spent rather a long time in jail for this, Mr. Langford.
Oh, no, I won't, conductor. Augustus Rakes might, but I won't.
You dirty swine, let me go.
What are you talking about?
You too, Diana. That wasn't John Jones in my compartment, as you both know. It was John Dwerrihouse, director of the East Anglian Line, traveling incognito. He was carrying 75,000 pounds on him tonight.
What makes you so wise, Langford?
Because I saw him slip the roll into my cigarette case. He walked into your compartment by accident, Rakes, to get away from me. You, as bookkeeper of the East Anglian line, were the only one who knew he had taken the money.
Very clever.
Yes, so you held him up. And when you discovered he wasn't carrying the money on him, you knocked him on.
Oh, I would have known Dwyer House if I'd seen him, Mr. Langford. In fact, anybody on the entire line would have known him.
He disappeared before you collected tickets. He didn't need a ticket or a reservation. He owns this company. And you, Diane, you're Rake's girl. That fast trick of yours didn't fool me for a minute. You threw the suitcase out of the window. Your mother saw Rakes carry Dwelly House into the smoking compartment. Rakes killed her because he couldn't take a chance.
Rakes, did you?
Of course I did. I wasn't going to let an old hag spoil my game.
Oh, you double-crossing swine.
Then Rakes hid John Jones or John Dwelly House in the smoker until he could get rid of him.
So what?
When I went into the smoking compartment looking for the old boy, you followed me, planted a fast one in my jaw, then carried Mrs. Winters in, hoping to frame me for a murder. Finally, you dragged Dwelly House up on the top of the car, planning to get rid of him all along the way.
You can't prove a word of it, Langford. You can't prove a word.
Who can? Dwelly House's body slipped over the edge, caught in a prong, scared the living daylight out of Lydia.
Oh.
Yes, that was the upside-down face you saw at the window.
Oh, how awful. It wasn't a ghost.
No, it was no ghost.
It's a good story, Langford, but you can't make it stick.
Oh, can't I? When you hit me, you took my cigarette case with the 75,000 pounds in it. Look him over, Farrell.
Don't put your hands on me.
Shall I knock
Don't
him out, boss?
Yes, you had better.
Here's the cigarette case, boss.
Good work, Farrell. Yes, the 75,000 pounds is inside.
But how did you ever know Rakes was guilty?
When he hit me a while back, I played the possum. Made him think I was knocked unconscious. Then I followed him through the window of the train and saw him. I waited till he returned to spill the story.
All very simple.
Mr. Langford, one question, please. How did you happen to be on the train?
The board of directors sent for me. They suspected Dwelly House was juggling their books and wanted me to investigate the line. Dwelly House did juggle the books. He stole 75,000 pounds, pocketed it, and tried to disappear. Yes, as a matter of fact, he had steamship tickets, all set to go to America.
Oh, and I thought he was a ghost.
Well, he is now, Lydia. His body is lying in a ditch a few miles back.
The train is stopping. Well, folks, here we are. Labor up! Labor up! Labor up!
To conclude my report, the train pulled to a stop at Claybrook Station. Augustus Rakes was arrested for first-degree murder. The 75,000 pounds in question was returned as per instructions. Diana Winters was taken into custody. She had been responsible for the entire plan. It was she who had engineered the entire plot, having access to Dwelly House's private documents as his secretary. This closes my report to the acting chairman of the East Anglian Railroad. Respectfully submitted by your agent, William Langford.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought to you the story, The 4:15 Express. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
Come on, Quasimodo, hit that bell.
Yes, master.
Oh, that wraps up the 4:15 Express from Weird Circle.
Yep. I'm sure there's something we can learn from this one.
Yeah. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
You're asking for trouble when, as a ghost, you try to double.
So that's in 2 minutes.
Hey, you know, Dale, we were talking about Granny Clampett. And it reminded me of something. I quickly downloaded, and here it is.
A lot of people look at me and wonder, what can that thing be? Is it fish or fowl? Trout or owl? Vegetable or human? A Well, gals and guys, I'm going to put you wise. You're looking at a woman. I can wash out 44 pairs of pants and have them hanging on the line. I can start your iron 2 dozen Levi's before you can count from one to nine. I can scoop up a great big dipper full of schmaltz from the dripping can, throw it in the skillet, go out and skin a rabbit and be back before it melts in the pan. Cause I'm a woman. O-M-A-N. I'll say it again. Now I can rub and scrub Jethro's boots until they're shining like a dime. Chuck the peas, shoo the fleas, and clean the outhouse at the same time. Get all dressed up, go out and dance till 4 a.m., and then lay down at 5, jump up at 6, and start all over again. Cause I'm a woman. W-O-M-A-N. I'll say it again. Now, if you come to me sickly, you know I'm going to make you well. And if you come to me all hetched up, you know I'm going to break the spell. And if you're hungry, you know I'm going to fill you full of grits. And if you're dry, I'll mix your corn liquor with sauerkraut juice. Ain't that a blitz? With that kind of a drink, you won't need a rocket to get to the moon. Because I'm a woman. O-M-A-N. I'll say it again. Now I can stretch a greenback dollar bill from here to kingdom come. Tend the stills, pay my bills, and still end up with some. I got a $20 gold piece to prove what I just said. I can make a dress out of a feed bag, and I can make a man out of jail. Cause I'm a woman. O-M-A-N. I'll say it again. Cause I'm a woman. O-M-A-N. And that's all. Beat your heart out, Zsa Zsa.
It's kind of warm in here.
Not quite the same effect.
Go ahead.
Now, I was just going to say, not quite the same effect when Raquel Welch sang that, but, you know, it's still effective nonetheless.
Well, I was thinking more like the only thing better would be maybe striptease with Maria Ospenskaya. I don't know.
Well, sorry, CW. Sorry, CW.
The other good thing is another Train Tale tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern, right here. CBS Radio Mystery Theater and the Good Time Express. No, I don't know what the story is about, but that's what we're having tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern, and then when it's all over at 8 p.m. God, I wonder what happened.
Starring Gar the Ghoul, bleh, bleh, and all that fun jazz on Twitch TV. I forget. You'll have to go to Facebook and find it.
You want to give them any kind of sneak preview of your content?
No, we don't do that.
Oh, okay.
No.
That's how you get canceled.
Oh. Oh, there's other ways to get canceled. And I've probably danced around those many times.
Uh-huh.
Many. Anyway. Tomorrow we're getting close to Halloween season. Be prepared. We're going to be doing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yep.
No, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
We get paid overtime for that, right? We do.
Time and a half. Okay. Time and a half. Clock your hours.
Wait a minute. I have to pay to be on this show. I got to pay
you tomorrow.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Damn, my eyes.
when next we meet in Frankenstone.
So come along.
Don't come alone.
I got the don't come alone in there before it went off from live. There we go.
There we go.
That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice turnout tonight. My goodness.
Yeah. I didn't get to call in quick enough, so if I get cut off again, it's my own fault.
Yeah, that was interesting. I had to go searching for train stories. Because if I'm going to say, Dave, this won't work, I've got to have a replacement in hand. You know.
Yeah.
So I went a-looking, and I found that one.
I went a-looking, and you found that the haunting half hour, which was 28 minutes and 58 seconds. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoa, hello. What was that?
And it was barely haunting at that.
Yeah.
No, it was.
The second one was almost more haunting, except there weren't any ghosts in that haunting.
Two of them didn't have ghosts. From now on, we'll make all the train stories have ghosts in them. Or we're not using them. We need ghosts. Oh, come on.
Yep.
Oh, Pancho ringing tomorrow. Okay. Well, yeah, CW. Definitely do ring in. Ring-a-ding-ding.
Yes, please do. Or we will be sad. We will weep openly.
I keep getting ba-ding noises.
Yes.
Sorry. Sorry, guys. Sorry about that. I think that's all of them.
That's all the what?
9 million tabs that say Facebook and to turn them all off. Anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So, I think I put it in there. When we were doing this, all of a sudden I had a flashback to, there was a park we had for kids, and they had an actual caboose, a real caboose that at one point in time was on a track mm-hmm. somewhere, and I don't know how it got there, but they put it in a park, and they sealed up the doors and everything, so you couldn't get into it. But instead, we were allowed to climb on it back when kids were indestructible.
See, my neighborhood park was more updated than yours. We had an abandoned jet plane in ours.
Oh, wow. And if, so
if the kids
were able, they could climb on it, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We climbed all over that thing.
25 feet in the air. Going, hi, Mom.
We had cardboard once.
We had cardboard once.
But, you know, you get one good rain in there, you know.
I was going to say, after it rains, you know, too late
Welcome
to think
to
of
wax. Welcome
to the paper
mache park for kids. Yeah.
We should have waxed it.
Paper mache for kids.
Well, you know what? What's funny is, you know, my oldest son, he teaches he's a teacher as well, and he was teaching STEM to some kids after school class STEM, and one of their projects was making cardboard boats, and took them up to what's that college up there? Case Western, and they had a pool, and they were able to put in a. Well, no, they got to see how long they could keep them their boats afloat, their cardboard boats afloat.
Yes.
And they had to have at least one person in there. Yeah.
I've seen competitions like that. People really do seal them with wax or other type things to help the cardboard keep from leaking too fast.
Just spray it down with Scotch Guard. You're done.
Yeah. I'm not sure the Scotch Guard is illegal for them to use that.
They don't have to know about it.
Flex Guard, man. Like the commercial. You just spray it on. A little Flex Guard there.
Yeah,
except you have to wait 24 hours for that to take effect. So,
oh, you do?
You know, because I tried to fix an office chair that they were going to get rid of. I thought it was really in good shape, except it was kind of peeling off. So I got some of that spray-on flex guard.
Okay.
And
you sat on it.
I waited over 24 hours, but it didn't help it. And no, I didn't get all marked up, but it kept
your pants on. Your pants were on the chair when you stood up.
No. I did it Saturday morning, and I didn't sit on it until Monday. So. But I did try to do something silly like that. Actually, it looked pretty darn good. It just didn't hold. I thought, you know what, if this thing can repel water, but it can't stay on in place here, what's the matter with this? If I would have thrown that chair into the pool, I could have swam around in it. But no, you know.
Yep. No such luck.
No such luck.
Just like K-Tel. When she really got it, it was like, oh, man. El Cheapo.
I thought this song was a little longer here.
Yeah, exactly. What is this 30-second version of Freebird, man? What is this? I was sure it was longer than that.
I had it on the K-Tel record because they were in the cutaway bins, right? Okay. So
yep.
I got this one that had the Wayne Newton singing "Daddy, Don't You Walk So Fast," and it wasn't until I saw it on Fridays they kind of did a parody of, but they played the actual song. There's a whole other verse in there I didn't even know was there.
Maybe that's how they saved on royalties if you don't play the whole song.
No, that was how you
jammed
25 songs on an album.
on a two-sided album, yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, I had one of those. Little did I never realized that it wasn't all there. Okay.
And, I mean, it was artful editing for the most part where you...
If you didn't know any better,
you'd think, okay, that was it. Short tune, but a good one. No, they were actually better.
Well, that's the radio version, you know, because usually the album version was longer, right? So this was the radio version. But it wasn't.
And then there's the K-Tel version, which is even shorter than the radio version.
That's right.
So you got album version, radio version, K-Tel version. That is your progression. Or regression.
Yep. Regression. So much fun.
I think I'm going to get into politics. Guys. I'm going to go in as a regressive.
A regressive.
I'm with the regressive party.
Yeah. We're going back to 1898.
Oh, no. No. We're going back farther than that.
Bring back stone and rock.
Bionic Sasquatch. Yeah, there we go.
And then there's always Bionic Sasquatch.
Yes.
This would be a good... This would have been a good episode to have the Bionic Man, like, jumping sound effect, that little jiggly sound effect. Yeah.
Yes.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
Now, all we got is, if somebody mentions a certain city name.
Parma!
Oh, he's ready with a button this time.
Well, yeah, I set it up kind of a little bit. I was kind of hoping we
did
fall into that. And yeah, I wanted to give the appearance that once in a while I do pay attention.
Well, that'll...
I was attempting to create a video for a friend who sent me some medication. And
on the street corner, or what?
No. And so I'm using this recording program that's also the broadcasting program for the Heart of a Heart thing.
Right. And
I recorded it. And I had the it was recording video. It was recording audio, and I forgot to press a button. And because of that button, it recorded the audio, but it recorded a static image instead of the video. And it recorded it that way. And so then I was like, oh, man, because it was perfect. And you cannot, it's like trying to, you can't unbox something twice. I mean, it just doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't go.
Yeah.
So I set it up. So I was going to pantomime it. So I set it up so the video was there, and I went through and I pantomimed it, but I clicked the wrong button and I streamed it live.
I saw it. I saw that Gar went live on Twitch. I saw that. I just
I had to get rid of that because I don't show up on camera.
Right, because it was you.
Yeah, it was
you.
Me.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh no.
So then I'm sitting there almost wanting to rip my computer apart trying to delete that file. I finally did. and then I had to get back on the thing and record it. And so it's this weird disjoint audio video. But it still came off funny.
It did.
The joke is that in a certain country, this medication is great for migraine headaches. However, in the U.S., it's only used for some type of horse tranquilizer. And so I found perfect horse noises, you know, for this. And I put it in there, and it was really funny.
It was.
Dale, I can send you the link if you'd like to look at it. It's out there.
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It to Dave, and Fogsbane saw it. And, of course, the guy that sent me the stuff, he saw it, and he thought it was hilarious. It was like, oh, well, there you go. Because I was joking around, you know, that taking that medication, the way I'm going to count is like this. You know, I'm
with your
foot. Not going to be able to count correctly. So.
Coming up is Cedar 5. How many is that, Gar?
I don't know. I'm counting in Roman numerals with my foot. I don't know what's going on. Frickin' buttons. Oh, I hate buttons. And especially when you're doing something live and you know, there's so many buttons. It's like, even when I'm not trying to do stuff, buttons still confound me.
Yep.
Buttons.
Yep. Yep.
Who knew?
Makes getting dressed a challenge.
It does. I got these shirts, and they have like these epaulets on the shoulders, a little hanging.
Yeah.
Anyway,
cool.
I got them, and I was like, all right, cool. And I got them, and it's a button-up shirt, but the majority of it is a zipper, and you zip it up like a jacket, but you fold over a flap, and the flap is fake buttons.
Why?
Yeah, I was like, what? It's got two buttons, like the top two buttons are real buttons, but everything below that is a zipper aspect, and the whole thing folds over, and it looks like it's a button-up shirt. It's like, at what point in time do you need to get out of a button-up shirt that quickly? I don't know.
Old zipper button shirt. I remember those.
Zipper button shirt, man. I don't know where that came from. Who sat there? Who in R&D was like, we need a zipper button shirt? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. But speaking of that era,
I'm sensing
clothing,
a need.
Speaking of that era in clothing, did you also want a like shirt with that V pattern like they had in the in Lost in Space? Like the men would wear shirts that had like a...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember
V with a
velour
different color,
shirts, but they had a collar. Mine had a collar.
Well, yeah, you fold the collar down, I think. No.
Oh, no,
okay. Their shirts didn't have collars. You're right. You're right.
Right. Yeah, they were pullovers. I liked where June Lockhart was doing the laundry, and she put in the laundry, and then she pulled it out, and it was all not only was it clean, it was
folded,
ironed, and in a baggie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those, it was one of those space bags, of course, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I was like, wow.
With all the air sucked out.
Well, where else would you get your laundry done? Or how else would you, I should say.
No, well, I, you know, and when they sat down for dinner, it just came out of that open slot in the wall.
Yeah, hands kinda already like sliced. Yeah.
There was a cake baking.
Even there they didn't trust Dr. Smith with a knife.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I so wanted them to
I sure as hell wouldn't
guy.
Trust him with William.
I know. What the heck? Okay.
That's
I just,
so troubling. So troubling.
Well, like I mentioned on the adventure we had on the train with the young girl, and the guy was macking on her. I was like, she young girl, what are you doing? Get away from the girl.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck? But,
yeah,
Grant.
Grandpa, no. Stop.
Yeah. not only that, I mean, Dr. Smith was constantly throwing the children to the lions in one way or another.
Yes, yes.
Not just Will, Penny, if he could, you know, whatever it would take. He didn't care.
Or
the
monster,
robot.
Hungry monster, pick one of these guys, not me.
Yeah, exactly. They were cannon fodder.
That's right.
Over the years, I've only grown to dislike that character more and more. It has not gotten better. It hasn't lessened with age. Just, they should have airlocked that guy out first season.
They should have listened to Don. He always wanted to chuck him in.
Oh, I know. It's like, please,
into the void.
And these are the parents of the children, and they're like, oh, silly Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
I was like,
we'll forgive him again this time. It's like, no,
I know.
This is Gilligan, man. This is wrong.
Yeah. This is, you know, the parents are rolling their eyes like, oh, what'd you do now? It's like, oh, God. What is going on?
John got mad. Professor Robinson, he got mad sometimes.
A few times, but not mad enough. Not mad. There should have been a laser rifle duel going on at least once, you know.
Well, you know, no, there is a real reason why they didn't chuck him into space. Because right at the moment that decision would be made, and then, you know, Dr. Smith ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. See, they could. Well, actually, I really think they should have replaced Dr. Smith with Lassie. It would have been a great show.
Absolutely.
Lassie the space dog, and everyone would have been happy. Except for Dr. Smith, he'd been a frozen chunk of carbon atoms or something.
It just amazes me how Irwin Allen let him run away with the... with the show, really.
He did.
I know. Why? Why?
I think Irwin moved on to other projects or something.
Well, I read an interesting thing, too, though. Or not read. I watched kind of a special on Lost in Space. And something interesting happened halfway through the first season. A huge television phenomenon I know that you are very familiar with, Gar.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Batman show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right around the time that Lost in Space started switching to corn.
Oh, huh.
Corny stuff. And the studio was like, oh, yeah, this is the rage right now, this kind of camp, this corny stuff, you know? Let's get into that. And
so in a way, even though it was great for Batman, it ruined Lost in Space. In my opinion. Yeah.
Yes, in a lot of people's opinion.
Yeah. See, for Batman, that was the deal. That was the direction. But for Lost in Space, no. Lost in Space was like... Lost in Space, to me, is one of those television... Kind of like... There isn't that much corn, C-O-R-N, in Space 1999. They played it serious.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was a straight-up sci-fi show.
And a really, in the inception of Lost in Space, I was really looking for that, and we didn't get it because of Smith.
Yeah.
And apparently because of Batman.
To a degree. You know, it started out as a family adventure show. It was, and and the thing they pointed out that if you think about it, Will, especially maybe going into the second year, he was like the most relatable one, which is why he was a big part of the change development stuff. They became very, all the stories became Will-centric, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Judy was almost an afterthought most of the time. Is she on the show?
She was over there. She was definitely the eye candy, but she was over there with Don doing adult things. They couldn't really.
Hey now. No, they're watering the vegetables or whatever.
Is that? That's code, right?
No, it's all right. Not code. I meant actually watering
vegetables.
Where's
John and Duty? Oh, they're all
from
watering
the space garden. Space garden, you naughty boy! Naughty!
Watering the vegetables.
Naughty boy. Naughty.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, and the parents are off, you know, I don't know if they're, see, that was the wild thing, is that they had Dr. John Robinson, doing all kinds of stuff, scientific stuff, but also the wife was a doctor, too. She was a doctor, and she was doing, you know, her scientific stuff. So, I mean, they're really pushing forward quite a few bold concepts.
They still had her more doing domestic stuff on the show, though. I saw her doing a lot of dinners and laundry.
Dinner, laundry.
I think that clearly in the Netflix version, they focused big time on Maureen's education, skills, and ability.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they changed that whole thing. And I'm waiting. There's still another season out there for us to see.
Yeah, I like it, and I don't. I you know.
Well, they definitely got rid of the B9, didn't they?
Yeah, they kind of. That's a whole different. But the relationship is interesting. It's like a between it and Will.
Yes. And it's more of an AI than the B9. Well, the B9 became that, yeah. The B9 evolved right before our eyes from...
Oh, yeah, from a murderous danger to...
To...
Bubble-headed booby.
Yeah, well, to snide comments to Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
And opinions and singing and...
Yes, sing. Quote-unquote
yeah,
singing.
One scene, he had a guitar.
Yes. Yep.
Home on the range or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're singing around the campfire or something.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I'm looking forward. I watch. This is kind of like my take on Batman. My take on Batman will always be, my heart is always with the 1966 version. However, there have been many iterations that are, they're not my 1966 one, but I'm watching and enjoying all the ones up to today. The same with Lost in Space. Lost in Space has gone through so many iterations. There have been several movies that are different than, you know, from what we had before.
Oh, and I learned something, too. I learned something else that you might find interesting if you didn't already know from that documentary I was watching, the Gold Key Comics. I think it's Gold Key.
Yes, Gold yes, Key? Yes, yes.
The Space Bordell, Family Robinson. Do you remember Space
yes.
Family Robinson? Yeah,
yes.
That actually existed before the television show.
Yes, yes, and they had to, there was a...
Change the name. They had to change the name
yes.
of the show to avoid...
Litigation
the...
or something, yes.
Yep, yep.
Yes, and I don't know if I actually have them.
Did know
or
that.
Those comic books are on my wish list at Amazon, or I actually have them here. I know I've got Star Trek from Dell, but I don't know if I've got the Gold Key Dell...
I might have an issue of it laying around. I don't know.
Oh, well, what they've got now is they've gathered together all of them, compendiated them together, and bound them into books. So there's like five or six books, and then that's all of them. I can't
yeah.
remember if they're color or not. I think they're color. I think they're printed in color on a shiny, nice Baxter paper or something.
Thank you. But, thank God for reprints. That's how I got to really get into the Tales from the Crypt stuff. They
right.
did comic book sized reprints of the originals. I don't know what company it even was, but I mean, it was like panel for panel. I don't know if the color may or may not have been off, but it was exactly a reprint of the old. And I mean, you know, they had Tales from the Crypt and the Witches, whatever. And,
yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
have a box full of them upstairs somewhere.
I've got the reprints.
Bagged.
Yes. Yes. The reprints of did it was Marvel. Marvel did Dracula, Tomb of Dracula. Marvel did Werewolf by Night.
Yeah.
And Werewolf did and Marvel did Monster of Frankenstein or something like that. And I've got
yeah.
all those black and white paperback reprints. And they're bound together, and it's like three volumes max, and that was it. That followed the entire run.
Hold on, I want to see if I could send you a message. Wait a second.
Well, I turned off the Facebook, so.
Oh, did you?
But I mean,
right.
I can turn it back on. You know. And
yeah,
I'll
I was just
going to
send you a picture and ask you if you have ever seen this
oh,
before.
Oh, sure.
On, one second,
let me flip over onto this.
That's all right. I got to find the goddamn thing. There we go.
Hello.
Okay, there it is.
Okay, any second now. Did you put it in the group or did you put it in the
no, just
daily?
No, just to you, sir.
Oh, that. Yes, those. Oh, I'm a fan
those
of that
Those would be something
character.
To get a hold of. Those would be something to get a hold of. Because that's like
oh,
50s,
yes.
I think. Or 40s even.
Yes, and I would take those as reprints just all day long.
Yeah,
I would love
so
them.
Would I. The art is kind of cool when you see the covers.
Yes. I just love the stylized artwork this artist
yeah.
had.
They're very distinct and unique. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of and just a weird way that he created the face of the monster.
Yeah.
It's unusual. It's different. And
Dick Bonifer
yes,
or something.
I ran across these, and I know you're not a DC guy, but DC did this in the 1980s. 1970 and 1980, they came out with the Creature Commandos, where a Frankenstein monster, werewolf, and Dracula vampire.
You and I
character.
Talked about that last week, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I went ahead and I pulled them, so I've got them tomorrow. I had them out last week, and I didn't pull them out to show them. But I'll show them on Horrible Horror tomorrow, and I'll mention, you know, you folks getting ready for Halloween. If you want some scary comic book reading, there you go. These are out there, and you can get them. I'm not selling them, but I'm just telling you they're out there. You can go get them. So yes, I went ahead and I went ahead and got. After I found the ones that were printed in 2003, I went back and I got the reprints for 1980, and those were interesting. They eventually involved a woman with snakes for hair. I forget who that Medusa. No, is that Medusa? No.
With the living hair, yeah, I think from the X.
With
no,
the
from
snake
the Inhumans.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, no. This is the monster lady with snakes for hair. That if you
yeah,
look at her, she turns to stone.
Or a gorgon. Any gorgon.
Oh, okay.
Medusa
okay,
is
yeah.
Medusa is a gorgon.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
They have a character that is a Medusa. She's got the snakes for hair, and then they've got a few other characters in there. And I just thought it was interesting that they would go, you know what, we could use these for a war.
Yeah. I remember Marvel had, that's who I was thinking of, Marvel's character, Medusa.
Yeah, yeah, the inhuman, the girl with red hair, and her hair would grab you and throw you all over the place.
Yes. She had strong
Unfortunately, they tried an Inhumans TV series in the last 10 years, and it failed. It didn't make go far.
I like them. Of course, I like anything from Jack Kirby. And I started watching a video, and damn it, I lost it now. It came across my feed up on my Roku. I get YouTube on my television, you know?
Uh-huh.
And there was it was great because I used to have the originals. It was Fantastic Four, 48, 49, and 50, and they were going panel by panel a video.
Oh, neat. Oh, okay.
Just retelling them, and that was the ones that introduced Silver Surfer and Galactus and the Watcher and, like, all these, like, amazing, like, cosmic beings, you know? It's pretty cool.
I remember I can go back to, like, 1972 and reading the Fantastic Four where the Puppet Master somehow turns Ben Grimm back into a human or something.
Yeah.
And I remember I had that comic in my hand, and I was reading. It was summer, and I was reading, and I read it, and then I'd read it again, then I'd read it again.
Wasn't his girlfriend Alicia was related to him, like it's his daughter?
Yeah, Alicia Masters, his girlfriend, was the daughter of the Puppet Master, so that was...
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was crazy.
That must have been a reprint, because that's a really old one for the early 70s. That's like a pre-me one, too.
It was, let me think, was it Kirby? Was Kirby drawing? No, who was drawing?
Yeah,
was Kirby?
It seems like it would be Kirby. And you know what you might have got it in is Marvel's Greatest Something or Other. It was reprints early Fantastic Four. Yeah,
maybe that was it. But I do remember as a young kid in 1972, that's pretty young for me.
Yep. That's very young for you. I was 12, so you were what, about 8?
Oh, I know. It could have been that I had access to someone's comics or what was left of them. They were in shabby condition. They're like, oh, yeah, here you go. Here's a whole paper grocery bag of comics in there. We were going to throw them out, but if you like them, there you go. And,
oh, wow.
So
I did not know there's Cinema Wasteland this weekend. I see Tar and Feather are going there, Dr. Tar and Professor Feather.
A live event?
It's a horror trade show that's in Cleveland. Like, it used to be twice a year. I don't know if it's still twice a year, but it's like a darker side one. You got more of your goth people showing up there, and it's a lot of gore stuff. You know what I mean? It's not the kind of horror you and I like.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? That's hardcore
blood.
I do.
I don't
it's
know
fun,
how many
though,
times.
You see a lot of pierced people, you know, interesting.
Yeah.
Screw with them by running around with a strong magnet, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wouldn't that, you get an earth magnet, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you know why it wasn't a good idea.
Hey. Well, it was one of my favorite singers. Her name's Storm Large, and she's an amazing singer. Someone came up to her and asked her something, and it had to do with the augmenting versus all of the metal hardware
things
that you can get.
Yeah.
And she says, you know what, I'm going to get more of a second look with these than having a tackle box on my face.
Exactly. Tackle box.
You know, and I was like, yeah, I agree, you know, and she,
okay, so I just settled two debates this week. Two internet debates, yes.
Okay.
One, debate one, which hurts more, a woman having a baby or a man getting kicked in the nay-nays?
I would guess the baby.
I disagree, and here's why.
Did your wife weigh in on this?
Go ahead.
She does not like my analysis, let us just say.
Oh, okay.
Which is thus, a woman will have a baby, right? And like a couple of years later, it's like, I'd like to have another baby.
Oh. Okay.
But
there
how many
go.
Guys
all right, all right.
would
yeah,
say,
no.
You know, I miss that. I think I want to, yeah, no. Debate two.
No, there's a, I can't think of his name. Buddy Hackett on The Tonight Show tells a joke about a guy who shoots a duck, and the duck falls into a farmer's yard. Mm-hmm. And the guy doesn't live there. He's from the city, and he goes to collect the duck, and then goes, that's my duck. And the farmer says, it's on my land. It's my duck. And goes, well, no, I shot it. It's my duck. And he's like, well, there's only one way to settle this. He goes, how's that? Says, I'm going to kick you as hard as I can in the groin. And then after that, you're going to kick me as hard as you can in the groin. And whoever can't take it anymore, it's their duck. You know, what?
Yeah.
It's the other guy, whoever, you know. And so the guy goes, well, I really want that duck.
Oh, good Lord.
So the farmer goes, okay, all right, well, I'm first, so here you go. And he backs up, he runs a couple feet, and he kicks a field goal, you know.
Yeah, oh.
And they goes, oh, waha, And then after about 20 minutes, the guy goes, all right. It's my turn. Farmer says, yeah, you can have the duck.
Yeah, no, I'm my mistake, your duck.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. All right, debate number two. Debate
yes.
number two, you ready?
Uh-huh.
Settle this one, I feel good about this. How is it that the Flintstones celebrate Christmas?
Oh,
you might get
no.
this. You have a mind... You have a mind like mine in this area. You might get this one. There is a correct answer to this. A correct and logical explanation that explains how the Flintstones would celebrate Christmas.
What do you got?
Gazoo told them about it, dum-dums.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'll agree.
Does that sew it up? Does that, I mean...
I'll agree.
A, it's a cartoon. B, you know, Gazoo, the powerful Gazoo.
And three, Santa Claus is not doesn't have anything to do with you know, Santa Claus is Santa Claus. So
yeah, I don't think they made it a religious thing.
Yeah, no, Santa Claus is forever, and doesn't have a time stamp on Santa.
Yeah, I think Christianity and the Flintstones would be a bit awkward. Just due to the time frame.
You can't time stamp, and that's what it is. It's a time stamp thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you get universal characters like Gazoo, the great Gazoo.
I mean, I could have been a jerk and said, dude, it's a cartoon, but I thought I'd be a bit more thoughtful.
No. Well, I think you got three there. I think one is you got characters like Gazoo. You got characters like Santa, mm-hmm. and it's a cartoon. And
I think people were better at separating television from reality back in the day when we were kids, when we were younger.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that we did have a separation, a chop off, a distinction between the Santa Claus figure, which has nothing to do with anything, and anybody can do that, versus, you know, the other side of it, which is the religion side. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I will forever enjoy my Santa Claus.
Yes, you should. You were meant to.
Yeah.
My brother, I'm going to do see if the dog has a late night visit outside he needs to do.
Yeah,
maybe I'll join him out there.
There you go. Well, you know, if you live far enough out there, you can do whatever you want.
No. We have neighbors.
You have neighbors and unfortunately, lighting, artificial lighting.
Yeah.
I want to make. Well, you take care.
You know, I got a new fence for the dog, right? We fenced
you
in part of
our
yard.
You want a fence
for
the dog? The dog is using a fence? What?
Well, no, it's keeping him safe. And penned it into a huge...
Chain link or a privacy wood fence?
Chain
link. No one can see through.
Chain link.
Chain link. Oh, okay.
It's wood on the... The neighbor has a wood fence, so we just didn't do the side where the wood fence is. Our post is right next to his fence.
Right. Gotcha.
So... Anyway, I don't know where I was going with this. Oh, they sell like, anyway, here's what I want to do. I want to put like dragons or gargoyles or something on the fence posts. Cause you can do stuff with the end caps. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Pop them off and I could like, what I want to find though is something like a cast iron dragon or gargoyle or something that I could mount to them.
Oh,
that
I
would
think
cool.
so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in the corners, maybe I'll put some of those solar lights.
Yeah, yeah.
And make them like
my only misgiving about today's civilization is that I don't decorate for anything. Nothing. Zero. Nothing.
No?
And the reason for that is because I would have this horrible drop in my gut if I came home and just everything was stolen. You know, the people just walk up and steal.
Oh, yeah, stuff. Vandals and stuff.
Yeah. And you know, that stuff happens so quickly and it's just gone. And, you know, if you fixed up something and you really liked it, and then I see so many people going, oh, yeah, look what they put out. And I'm like, wow. Well, I hope that it stays and that nobody messes with your stuff.
I don't decorate outside anymore.
Because you know, you're advertising, you know, that you're celebrating.
Well,
and
yeah, no, I mean, they're standard. Like, we have a few little solar lights that go on for a while in the front garden, you know, to illuminate the front of the house. But,
yeah.
No holiday stuff anymore.
20 years on my residence here and not decorated once. Now, if I was to get something with like 5 or 10 acres attached to it, I'd be decorating, you know, every frickin' time there was something I enjoy decorating about. But
brother, I'm gonna get flying.
All right, have fun with your dog. Blah blah.
Yeah, but first.
Good night. Good night.
Here we go. Good night.
Time to say
woof woof.
Hey, John Boy.
Good night. Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Grandpa.
What more is this say but good night?
Good night, John Boy.
We've had a few laughs.
John Boy.
And it's time for toodaloo. What
the hell is that thing on your face?
Horrible.
I know. What is it? Here's a nickel. Get a rat to gnaw it off.
Yeah.
Good night.
Razor, shape closer.
Uh-huh.
Ow, ow, ow.
Ow. All right. Good night, man.
Good night.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever you are.